Hello and welcome to episode 453 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. My name is Vince Hunt, and joining me as always is the creator of the comic series Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And because we keep the cameras on, he tries to put me off every week, but instead I'm just massively aroused. It's Tony Esmond.
Hello.
I see you got your Batman mask on.
It's a cool one, this one, isn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't quite fit, so I have to sort of stick it on the end of my nose.
I've noticed your Batman voice is very much like your Green Arrow voice.
It's not like my old Sage voice that I did recently.
What Batman era is that? Is that Affleck?
I think it must be, yeah. Yeah, it is. Batman vs. Superman era.
Yeah. We can't have everything. Anyway, we're joined by someone else this week to the rest of the world. He's known as a mild-mannered, do-gooding, general all-round swell guy and man about town. But to us, he's the art maestro and creative Wunderkind, known as Thorp. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Ching, ching, ching.
You look like in the 90s you could have been a member of The Farm singing All Together Now with that new bonnet you got there.
Right, that's a pretty good reference, yeah.
Yeah.
I like them.
Yeah. As you know, Thorpe's been on the show a couple of times, but we're going to be talking about quite a creative subject. And is there anyone more creative than Thorpe?
No.
Did you paint
You're not supposed to say
it.
We're supposed to say it.
All right.
Did you paint
more
that picture?
Than Thorpe, that's for sure. I can tell you that.
He doesn't listen to this show.
No, that's fine.
He does.
Yeah. He does. Yeah. He's actually a real nerd in real life. He's not as cool as everyone thinks.
Oh.
Bless him.
Wow. What are you saying? Only nerds listen to this show?
Yes.
Yeah, we'd be lucky. The lowest
thank
nerds.
You, everyone, for listening to this show.
Yeah, thanks, cheers, thank you. The numbers have been up recently.
Yeah.
Not the only thing, Tony.
Are we nearly in double digits? Both on Tony's count and listeners.
Oh my!
I downloaded it 4 times. That makes 6 listeners.
Yes, it's going to be that kind of show this week. But thank you very much for listening. Tony took his glasses off. We've got to stop making mention of the video now that we've got
the vision. My attractive face.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. I just can't take it. And you know what else I can't take? How many amazing comics you can find on our sponsor. Yes, the lovely sponsor, Global Comics. It's the place to go for digital comics. There's a huge library of titles available to read from thousands of indie creators to hundreds of publishers like Image, Boom, Tokyo Pop, TKO Studios, Sourcepoint Press, Humanoids, to name but a few. I'm running out of breath naming those, and I left quite a few publishers out that I see on the list. And the catalogue is growing all the time. Gents, what do you want to shout out this week that's on Global Comics?
As we are all fans of having sex with robots, and that chance is getting closer, isn't it?
Okay. Yeah.
I think we'll find
it. Or they're going to do it to us.
Count of the days.
I'm game. I'm an old man. Yeah. I don't care. You can read Alex and Ada, the whole compilation, which is about a man who has sex with a robot, on Global Comics as well. Really good. I've just started that.
Is that
actually
one...
one of the Luna Brothers and Sarah Brothers. Vaughan, I think it is, doing it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What happened with the Luna Brothers?
That's great.
Didn't they split up?
Yeah, I think so.
Can brothers split up? I don't know, but they stopped working together, didn't they? I haven't seen any of their stuff for a while now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was about like 5-10 years ago. They were the big.
We had Sword and the girls and all this sort of thing, didn't we? Yeah. What did you fancy reading on there, Daniel?
There's some fucking thing called June.
What the hell's all that about?
They've got a special button. They've got a whole section for June, isn't
some
they?
Weird fucking thing.
Is that June, J-U-N-E?
Well, they spelled it with a D, which is weird.
D?
What?
Like a sand dune?
Yeah, sand dunes.
Who wants to read about that?
I've kind of seen that taken off. But if you want to read about that, there's like a whole plethora of books on Global Comics.
Dune, the Desert Planet, that fucking joke book they did. Do you remember that?
No.
There was like I'll get a picture of it sent to you. Yeah, there's like a joke. Cowboys of Caladan are in it and all this sort of thing. It's like a piss take on Dune. Well, I went and saw that Juno movie and I thought it was going to be about, you know, warriors in the desert. It's just about some bird getting pregnant underage. I didn't really know what was going on.
And drinks a lot of Sunny D, which isn't good for you.
Yeah,
but complaining to the cinema manager, where's the blue eyes? What the fuck's going on?
There was absolutely no spice in this.
Where's the eyes of a bell?
Oh, yeah.
Even though my previous joke alluded to the fact that I didn't know what June was.
No, we've totally ruined the bit. But either way.
You've got House Atreides and House Harkonnen, and they got the miniseries on there as well, haven't they? So Harkonnen's just finished, isn't it, I think? So I'm not moving on to that one yet.
Look, I mean, we talked about it a little bit last week. We need to have like a June month. I'm saying this for
week,
Tony
not
and
a
Dan,
month, week.
Tony and Dan, because they're massive nerds when it comes to this. So I'll just sit there quite.
We had a massive conversation about what a still suit would do if you do a jizz.
Yeah.
It'd reclaim it, I'm sure.
Of course it is.
And then you drink it, I guess.
You know how Stilgar spits on the table when he meets...
Is that what it is?
No. What if you did a jizz? That would they pay that well a go, thank you.
I mean, to be honest, that would have been a hell of a
scene.
Yeah.
Maybe that's in the porn parody.
Oh, probably.
They do porn parody still.
I'm sure they do.
It was lovely.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
I don't like
it
pornography.
Was lovely.
I find it demeaning.
Like it was the golden age. Father, the golden age of filmmaking.
The Justice League porn parody. Game of Bones. What a classic.
Wasn't there like they did a Pirates of the Caribbean one and it was like a ridiculously large budget for the, the show?
I'd say what? Allegedly. Though, Matt Simmons, who we all love and does all the weird stuff? He was talking, and one of the groups of him was talking about a Pikachu porn, and I was like,
"Oh, hang on!"
It's in the thing, and he said, "Yeah, it's horrifying," and that's what I needed to know. But he
what's it called? Pokemon. Anyway, you can find
Is it people in costumes? I need to know, or is it animation?
Yeah, no, it's people in costumes, and he sent me pictures.
What do you mean he sent me pictures for that one?
Oh no, not sexual pictures, just pictures of characters. Like,
People in.
But they were so scary, man.
Like, this sounds brilliant.
I tell you what.
You know, Matt's like that. He's just solid gold, that guy.
You'd be better off reading some fantastic digital comics. And on the Global Comics app, you can read, not that filth, but what Dan and Tony have been talking about, as well as you can follow creators, set reading state filters, and release notifications for books you're looking forward to checking out in the future. Like recently, I was very much in Something Is Killing the Children. Just ignore him. It's what Tony does. He likes to play with tech from the 80s.
The bygone
while we're trying
era.
To do
60s.
60s.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of camera.
It's a tricorder from Star Trek TOS. Oh. That better not be your penis with eyes drawn on it.
All they're doing, listeners, by ruining this ad is forcing me to stop the cameras from now on.
If Global Comics stick with us after this,
it'll be a miracle. It'll be a miracle.
This is a good advert. How long this advert has gone on for, though.
Yeah.
It's not all advert. That's good. Though. But if you happen to be a creative yourself, then you can publish your digital comics on Global Comics for free. They offer loads of great tools for indie creators to help with publishing, marketing, and more. So if you're an avid comics reader, creator, or maybe just someone new to the hobby that's listened to this show, and I don't know how it's happened, but maybe you want to start reading comics. It can't be anything that we've said. But you want to check out some great stories. Global Comics is the place for you. So go to globalcomics.com. That's comics with an X. You can download the app now on the Apple App Store or Google Play and start reading and publishing digital comics like never before. And I've just got to say a big thanks to them for putting up with this, because after a few weeks of this...
They're the lovely ones.
It's an insane app, though.
It's great.
Like,
there's
I went
so
on
much
it last week, and I was just like... It was one of those things where you hear they've got this, that, and the other on it, and you think, well, they've got some image on it, and they've got some humanoids and stuff. They've probably got a couple of bits, but it's absolutely rammed.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it going, I'm only paying this small amount of money for all this stuff.
Great.
How the fuck are they making any money?
I was thinking, I got my renewal today for the Marvel app, and it's similar. The Marvel app is, I pay 60 odd quid a year. And I read literally thousands of comics.
Yeah, exactly, Tony. Yeah. So you don't need to buy them week on week anymore. Yeah. Stop it. Stop it. Stop letting them mug you.
I was going to give a tip. If you're going to upload your comic to Global Comics, I think this is the same as Comic House. But if you've got a PDF, you've got to do the old outline fonts and flatten it, because I've had a couple of times where I've loaded it. You know, you kind of get all the weirdness kind of going on.
You get a shift.
You got to JPEG it.
Yeah, that's why I was JPEG it. The other thing I might say, the people who just put their digital version of their book on there, so you get like the cover with the little outline marks on the
trim marks.
Fucking make
that is lazy.
Do it. Yeah, that's really lazy. There's a couple of the bigger companies doing that. And I'm thinking, come on, guys.
I mean, that's literally the fucking print file.
It's literally. Yeah, they're just putting the print file.
Could not get lazier.
Yeah.
Could not get lazier. Wankers.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I haven't read any comics like that because all the
I've not seen
comics
one of
I read are great.
Yeah.
I think it was Incorruptible. I'm going to name it. Incorruptible, Incorruptible. The Mark Waid series.
I've got a trade. Is it a trade or two from that? Was that
Yeah, Irredeemable, Incorruptible, and then there was another one, wasn't there? Yeah, I remember the other one. Yeah. I think I'm preferring Incorruptible, actually. It's quite a good little series.
Yeah.
Incorruptible.
What's that one he's got about the kids in the class? I didn't read it.
Ignited.
Ignited. Yeah, man, that's fucking a weird
one.
I didn't
dig that one so much. No. I like his DC work at the moment, I have to say. Yeah. Okay.
Is that Mark Waid?
Yeah.
Read all of those comics on our sponsorship ad on the sponsors. So, but this week, of course, we've drafted a bit of help, but it's a bit of a creative topic because I think over the years, a few of us have read an issue or two in this kind of medium. I think our guest this week has been creating in that kind of medium.
I have.
So we decided to look at a side of comics that inspires creativity, goes beyond language barriers, and can potentially be some of the most effective forms of medium that you can find. That is the silent comic. And what do we mean by silent? Well, for one, it's a misnomer because comic books don't make any noise. But we are talking about those issues of books where actions like truly do speak louder than words because there's no real words on the page. So we thought we'd just explore that sort of side of comics because some of the most effective, I mean, we've all read them, I guess. Some of the most effective issues that I've seen or like sort of took me by surprise had like no words in them. Has it been the same for you guys? How do you feel about those kind of issues?
The thing is, I was thinking about it today, and the thing is with life is you don't talk all the time, do you? And most of my day is spent listening because I'm a married man or being quiet. And the thing is, there's a lot of things that you don't talk during, don't you? So I was thinking about this today. You don't talk when you're chasing someone,
no.
You know, or being chased. Mm. You don't talk when you're fighting with someone. You know, there's no, it's, you know, all these, they seem to have a fucking, it's like a Shakespearean monologue going on, soliloquy going on during.
They think that's a bit from Stan Lee, who seemed to just want to fill everything with a speech bubble. They
yeah,
to
a bit of personality. Yeah. And the other thing is you don't often talk when you're having sex. I called it making love in my notes, but no, I mean,
maybe you ask for directions, but other
well,
than
you
that,
can ask. Yeah. Well, at the end, you hear me sobbing, but I'm normally on my own. So, but
well, I never speak to my wife during sex, well, unless she rings up.
Write that down. That's a good one.
But I mean, most of your life is spent not talking. I know we're saying that, but we spend.
I
our,
spend
why have we got the camera on? Why have we
not
got
talking? Jesus Christ.
So it's only natural to me. And there's characters who it suits more than others. Like the Punisher. Punisher don't. If you're imagining him as a real person, he's not talking much, is he?
Yeah. But some of the most effective Punisher issues is the narration in his head. Because he doesn't really, if you look at how much he's saying compared to what he's thinking. I mean, we had Garth Ennis on, you know, one of the classics is if you compare the number of words in his speech bubbles compared to what's in his narrative sort of balloons is a vast difference.
Yeah. In fact, he wrote, we're going to talk about it in a minute, but I read through the 2001-2002 Nuff Said project that Marvel put out, and Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon did a Punisher issue. It's Punisher number 7. I think it's like volume 4 or something. And that's all about him hunting down this bloke and going through various people, showing pictures, being pointed in directions, and then the last scene is him shooting him from a rooftop across the road. Now, you shoot someone from a rooftop across the road, there's no conversation there, is it?
No.
And so it perfectly suits that story for the Punisher. He's this sort of lone hunter trying to find him, hunts him down, kills him. Yeah, I think that's perfect. I think there's this, you're right, there's certain characters it suits and certain characters it doesn't.
Also kind of the silent comic also usually means the absence of any kind of narration boxes or anything like that. It's not just not characters talking. It's usually just art on its own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you said, T, not everyone gets.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That, so, I mean, the best example of this is that event, the Nuff Said event. So, Bill Jameson and Joe Quesada basically challenged them. He said, I think they put this in one of the comics. We got the best set of writers and artists in the industry. I'm challenging you to tell a story where no one talks. And some of them did it well and some of them did it better.
Boy. Okay.
Yeah, some of them just seemingly just took word balloons out of a story, you know, and it didn't work as well.
You can't, you just can't do that, can you? You can't.
Yeah.
It's a different type of story that you're telling, isn't it, when it's...
And some of them related to dreams, which I found an interesting option that they got given. So they've gone, the Exiles, issue 7, and I think it's issue 123 of X-Force. They basically, it's an experience or a trip or a dream, a hallucination in a way. And that has been silent. Now, that's easier to do, I think.
And I would say this may seem controversial, and there may be, you know, these might be done quite well, but for me creatively, that's a bit of a cop out, because you're leaning on the, it doesn't necessarily all have to make sense, or there's some weirdness going on, or, you know, because it's a dream, it can be so visual. For me, it's more effective when you know this is real, just that we're watching it with the sound off, you know, to make that sort of term.
Let me tell you what the Exiles comic's about, then. I think you might warm to that one rather than the other one.
Probably the execution is really good. I think
it's an interesting one.
Yeah.
I think it's when they're given that project, they need to have an idea, don't they? They need to say, this is, you know, there's something we'll talk about, a comic that Forpy mentioned in the chat we had earlier. But all of the Exiles get a break, because, you know, they're in this, they're sort of reality hopping, aren't they? There's a group of them, and they all get a break to book into the Marvel Inn, which is like a hotel, and they all get their own rooms, and they all fall asleep, and they all dream about things. And the Thunderbolt character dreams about running across the mountains and chasing an animal. And to me, that works fine. And it also falls into that thing we talked about, Garth, with last week, 2 weeks ago, where there's a pause in the action, allows you to assess everything and also to bring out personality and character. And I think with that, they did that quite well to me. But the other one, the X-Force one, was just, it was like fucking taking a tab of acid and just reading a comic. You know, they just went there with it. Which, to be fair, they is it Dupe? Dupe was sort of center stage for that one. But with that one, not as good for me. Interesting visually, but from a story-wise, not as good. That makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, we've certainly had it where we've read some stuff that visually is so spectacular and can be completely off the wall, that the word balloons and the special effects are getting in the way. You know, that's I'd like to see this without all of that.
I mean,
go on.
I was going to say, it's people like, you know, like Seth, I really think people like that, they sort of cartoonists or artists do it really well.
Woodring was the one you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, Woodring. I mean, Seth, more from a kind of, not the fact that it's totally silent, but in terms of like how he tells a story, you'll have like words and things going on, and then he'll pause it for like X amount of pages. So you kind of breathe, take a break, and then you're kind of back into it. And I think, you know, like you were kind of saying earlier on about Punisher and stuff like that, like good action comics, any comic, it is nice when you get to a run of pages which don't have any words in it, and it's visual. If it suits, you know, like if, you know, Punisher's walking through the city, like Tony alluded to earlier on, you wouldn't really, maybe you're thinking stuff, but there's no real sounds going on, maybe a few kind of noise effects and that going on. And that actually builds tension and pressure and atmosphere, doesn't it? If the visuals are right. And then when words and stuff come back into it, you're kind of clicked back into the story. So I think, I totally agree with what you guys are saying. It's that kind of,
I think for a lot of comics, sci-fi, superhero, there's that suspension of disbelief that is added as part of, we naturally believe it when a character goes underwater and can talk to someone else, or goes into space and has this massive fucking conversation.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like there's that, we're used to that. We accept it when the Silver Surfer's talking to Galactus in outer space. We know, but, you know, it can't happen. Yeah. But
I think an interesting thing that happens, especially when you drop a silent issue in like a run of books that have always, you know, you can always hear the words, is, as comic readers, we're accustomed, comics are telling us what's being said and what's being heard. Comics aren't making that noise. When we read that noise, we hear that noise in our heads. And a silent comic does enough of that. It sort of says, right, here's the action. What does it, you know, what is happening? It asks a little more of the reader.
Yeah, it leans on in like imagination. So when you hear, see an explosion or something.
Yeah.
You're doing more of that lifting yourself.
I read.
It's dependent on a lot of real things,
because
you're
adding in your own.
Yeah. It's dependent on the ability of the storytelling as well.
Yeah,
yeah.
Much
yeah.
more.
Yeah. Because I was looking at Carthago. I just picked it up. And the reason I picked that one up when we were talking about this is Carthago, there's an awful lot of text going on there. There's a lot of story.
Yeah.
And yet there are moments...
A lot of exposition in it, isn't it?
There are moments with the giant shark attacks when some of these real visceral moments are happening. There's no sound effects and there's no words. Things just happen. Mm. And they're more... It works better because of that.
Yeah.
And that led me to think, you know, when you have a story that has a lot of words in it, is the action stronger when you don't have
potentially
sound to it?
Yeah.
You've got that juxtaposition of having lots of words and then having none.
Mm. Yeah.
But then, I like that. Yeah. Mm. It gives you that little break, doesn't it? That little taster. Yeah.
I think as well, what also happens in these kind of silent issues of things is that you have to, I don't know about you guys, but there's been times where I've read a few of these books and maybe I've gone like 6 or 7 pages later and I'm like, how the fuck did they get there? And I have to like go back.
Yeah.
And then there'll be like a real small detail because I've been going through the panels so fast, because that's what you do when you're reading, don't you?
Yeah.
You have to almost slow down and take everything in because you're like, there is something in this page where it's going to mean something in 7 pages time if I don't keep up with kind of what's going on. You know?
The speed of reading is really important, isn't it, when you come to comics sometimes? Yeah. You know, I think if you're reading too much on a page, it does stop you taking in the reality of what you're meant to be reading, the verisimilitude of it, you know.
It's weird that, because like obviously you read normal textbooks, it's no problem. But like if I get a comic page and there's loads of text on it, suddenly it's like, oh, fucking hell.
Yeah.
Or drag.
No, yeah. But we'll read a 500-page novel.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like, yeah.
That's just what it is. I guess it's maybe just... I don't want to see that much text in a comic. I don't know what the thing is there. But...
The typography is usually shit, though.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Like if there's loads of words in a panel, the way it's crammed in, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a lot of space. It's crammed in. It's hard. Whereas if it's in a novel, it's usually spaced out.
But one of the differences is that like a comic is usually it's dialogue heavy, isn't it? A lot of the time, whereas a novel we're reading 500 words, but we're reading. Tony walked into the room. His trousers were off. He shouted, "There's the word," and that's the word balloon.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You shared a page recently.
That's
Tony.
Page one of our next comic. Just so we're clear.
You shared a page recently, didn't you, Tony? Of like a space comic, and it was like, holy fuck, the amount of exposition on one page.
Oh, that weird comic I found on Global Comics. The one
I was like,
Have you ever been late night, gone through Amazon Prime and just found there's like some weird film made about the reality of aliens or Bigfoot, Bigfoot meets the aliens?
There's some really strange stuff
like that
on the catalogue.
Bizarre stuff on there. It's a comic a bit like that. Yeah, to be fair. Yeah.
Like, things like that as well, like when you have like space or a galaxy or things like that. Mm. And I find that there's a tendency to do a lot of this in comics. When there's a double page spread of space, there's loads of there's loads of balloons, there's loads of boxes, because it's just a 2-page spread about space. But I don't know about you, but in real life, when you look up at the sky, you don't need any fucking words because it's kind of beautiful by itself. Do you know what I mean? So it feels like when I see a double page spread that's got like this gorgeous like nebula and there's all these fucking boxes all over it, I'm like, oh, that's really
nice. Yeah. I think there's a massive tendency to overwrite these days.
Mm. Yeah.
We see it every day, don't we, now? And I think you just got to let the visuals breathe sometimes. It's a beautiful comic art we get.
Would you say that's the editor's fault, or would you say that's the writer's fault for not trusting in the artist to deliver?
I think it depends on the company, I think the publisher, but I think sometimes editors just work in a sausage machine these days, don't they? And they just get it in one end, hopefully check the spelling, bunch it at the other end.
I don't know about you guys. I've written stuff and then I've drawn the comic, and then, like, I don't need to add in that speech bubble because what the character's emoting, I don't need to say, oh, that's really made me angry or something, because the character's shown that and you stripped it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, which goes to the fact that silent comics occasionally or quite often need good facial acting in them.
Yeah, I'm just going to go on to that.
Punisher one
has
Steve Dillon, and he's the fucking master of it, isn't he?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, legend. Unfortunately, I put my character in a helmet, so that didn't...
Yeah, but then you've got to use other tools, haven't you? Like their hands and body language. Were we on to that? Why don't you tell us a bit about that for brief? Like,
The
guys on the Slack will have seen it, weren't they? Because you put it on there.
Yeah. So, funny story. I'm listening to the Awesome Comics pod, And I think it maybe the third time you guys have said, yeah, everyone should really do a silent comic because it means you can get it globally in any language. And it's a really good thing to have kind of, you know, in your
easy
your
foreign rights market.
Yeah. And I was like, listen to these guys. I know what they're talking about. And that was my kind of catalyst. Sorry. I thought, fuck it, I'll do it. So I did. And I based it on a character called Drusa. And the name escapes me now, but it was basically like, Roman for, I think it was like powerful or warrior, something like that. I can't quite remember now, annoyingly. And I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if I did like a Man in the Iron Mask style thing where she's kind of woken up and then she doesn't know where she is. And it starts off just with her, what she can see. But the reason I put her in a helmet is because I needed a reason. I was like, it's got to be silent. So can she hear? Can she speak? And I quite like the fact that we don't know that. Like, I've got an idea for it all, but you don't really know that. So it's her kind of finding her way through this kind of trippy, kind of crazy-esque fort world, I guess, but with this helmet on. But the challenge was, and like, you know, me and Tony had done some great books, and it was always, I'm always trying to push my ability to tell stories and to do acting, and you know, and it is nails to do it silent because, like you guys have touched on, it's how do you communicate like pain, love, lost, worry, emergencies, all these things going on.
But not make it the same thing every time. Do you know what I mean? A pain expression changes, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know. And because she was in a helmet, I just used her eyes. So you never saw her eyes unless something was happening. So if she was high, they'd be like red. And if she was enraged, they'd be red. And also I'd use like veins on her body. So she was like, when she goes into kind of rage mode and she starts fighting, the veins kind of pop up to say that she's kind of, you know, blood's pumping.
It's all about shortcuts, isn't it? You know, you've got to give that sort of metaphor, you know, shortcut thing to say angry, you know. And manga does it the best in many ways, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I read a lot of manga, you know, a lot of kind of Dragon Ball Z and all those things that have like hyper over and One Punch Man, I guess.
And like, they can have like 30 pages of just one fight, can't they? Just like,
and they're silent, actually, going back, aren't they? A lot of those, no words at all. And which I think, like, again, when you guys have spoken about manga before that's had foreign language, you know, had Japanese in it, it doesn't really matter because they're so good at that kind of facial expression,
you can get
how
it.
Things move. You kind of get it, don't you?
Yeah.
You make up your own kind of story, really.
I mean, there is that element, you know, in certain forms of comics, you know, this doesn't apply to everything, where you should be able to read it without the script being added.
Totally.
You know, especially fight scenes and stuff like that. There is that extra dimension of adding words to it, but then you should be able to follow the progress of the plot. Not in everything. I'd say that purposely, but to follow the progress of the plot through that, perhaps a Captain, you know, I don't know, Thor comic or something, you know.
It was good fun though. I mean, like, as I kind of went through it, I think, like, the idea is that it's kind of like a three-parter is what I'm working on. Originally, I was just going to do the whole lump and then just bind it up at the end, but I was like, it'd be nice just to break it down into three parts and give those out to friends.
How did you find the balance, though, of like the storytelling? You know, because you could quite easily sort of say just fight. That's all it's going to be. But if you want to change that sort of tempo,
you got to So basically, for me, it was like, who is Drusa? What is she doing? Like, what type of person is she? So, for example, like when it kind of starts off, she's, you know, walking around and you're seeing these kind of creatures and stuff, and then she nails a deer with a spear, and then she kind of sits down and cooks it and eats it. So it's like, okay, well, you can tell that she can survive in the wild. She knows how to cook and she's kind of sleeping and whatever. So you've got that kind of idea. And then I think then she kind of gets up and carries on a bit longer. She finds something, what was that bit? No, it's a bit later on. She then like eats something bad, makes her vomit. She falls down. She gets into this huge kind of fight with this kind of beastly creature. And then she obviously kicked its ass. So the way I kind of like paced bits of it was trying to develop bits of her character where you could kind of tell that she could handle herself. She knows how to kind of survive. near the kind of the end of the first book, I won't spoil it, but you see again her having to overcome something and kind of go into survival mode, but not like, I think if someone's surviving, fighting something every single scene, it's like it gets a bit boring in a silent form. It's a bit lazy. So it's like, well, okay, well, the first scene, she's surviving hunger. The second scene, she's surviving this thing that she has to beat. The third section, she's surviving a huge fall. And then the final kind of act is when she, unlocks the next. Yeah, bang, you wish. Yeah. I put tits in it, and that's why I was like, Tony,
just for me. Thank you.
Bit of boobage. Thank you. And then the final kind of scene is when she sees the next person she's going to interact with, who's really important. He's going to be. Then, so what I want to do is stage each piece as an act. So the first one is you learn who she is, you learn that she can survive these things, and she's a warrior. The second one is that she's going to meet someone that is essentially going to test her, but more potentially like emotionally, and then more to a kind of kindness piece, really. Who he's going to help her, because her whole goal is to get this helmet off. You know, the whole way through it, she's trying to get it off. She's trying to remove it. She doesn't know where she is. She's disorientated. She finds this other guy, and then she's like, okay, well, I'll enslave him or whatever. He'll get this thing off me. And then the third act is then coming to terms with how has this happened, and we learn why it's happened. And then she has to make a big decision. Which at that point you'll learn, has the character changed or has it not? Mm. So it's those sort of things where, like, I kind of roughly planned it out, but you really need all that, because if she's literally beating people up the whole time, there's no dialogue to kind of... Whereas, like, when me and Tony did Hank, there was loads of fights and loads of crazy shit, but then you had a couple of pages where he would say a word here and there, which made him sound vulnerable, whereas... You can't really do that in a silent comic, like, oh, they're vulnerable in that one, but they're not in that panel, because you're moving too quick and you're not really picking it up. But
I think it's a cheat to do something like, you know, not a cheat really, but, you know, you see the mad Sergio maybe did it with a little thought balloon with a broken heart in it or something like that. Mm. I think if you're going to challenge yourself to do a silent comic, I would almost stay away from that. Whilst I like it when they do it, I think sometimes you've got to stay with it. But what I was going to say is Barbarians, to me, almost is the go-to. Barbarians and Cavemen are kind of the go-to for a silent comic, because they're just acting on their primal needs. There's no great debating society or, you know, great Red Skull plan that has to be described.
I was going to say, because on the third, your third book, Walker, you got, like, there's going to be some exposition there, so that might be quite tricky to sort of get around. Like, I don't know what the story is in regards to that, but like,
because it's also the world building, isn't it? I
mean,
that's like, can be like a massive challenge for a silent comic, especially a silent comic that doesn't, it's not issue 30 of a run we've already read. Do you know what I mean? If you're jumping in and it's silent, that's fascinating to me, because the one I read was Step by Bloody Step. Have you guys read this? This is This is it's on Global Comics. but I just want to get the creators right. But this is they call it a wordless fantasy, which was immediately something I wanted to ask you guys. Do you think it needs to be like it's on the cover? It says Step by Bloody Step, and you got this cool cover image, and then it says a wordless fantasy. There's something about that. Do people need to be told that, or is that something that will put people off? Is that...
You're going to find that out pretty quickly when you open the book up.
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
Nobody's saying anything. It's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is there somebody out there who's going to go, there's not enough words in this comic, I paid £9.99 for it? You know, is that sort of thing. Yeah.
But generally, if you're picking a book up off the shelf, you'd have a flick through.
And it is, I mean, this is like 192 pages, isn't it? And it starts off, it's like a giant suit of armour that's looking after like a small girl. The book opens and there's this massive suit of armor. And you can see this small child in its hand.
Who's the publisher for that, Pete?
That was Image that did that.
Oh, right, okay.
2022 it is.
All right,
I think it is Matthias Bergara as well. Is the
right.
So it's the creative team behind Coda, which I haven't read yet.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But
this was
a complete. I mean, it's a wordless fantasy, and it is literally that, but there's a massive world going on.
A 10-issue series or something.
And this girl sort of grows up. You see her grow up, and there's a massive, there's quite a big, some of it thematically in some ways felt reminiscent of Porcelain, the story of Porcelain.
I get you.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, it was interesting to me. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And like, you know, check it out if you want, because it's a beautiful looking book as well. But they're doing a lot of world building, but there isn't any words to it. So, but it's doing a lot of emotional storytelling. Like when the mask of this giant suit of armor comes off, you see this figure's face, and it's showing you. You know, when you see someone's tear, like just one single tear running down someone's face, you get the emotion there. And it was fascinating to me to tell this big story of, you know, palaces, of monsters, of you know, this fantasy sort of trek that is almost dreamlike in its own way, and the book is almost, it comes full circle in a lot of kinds of ways thematically and narratively, as well as having like massive action scenes, but also there's like a, later on there's a scene like with a, like in a palace, there's a ballroom scene, there's a dancing scene, and I was struck by how well they communicated what people are thinking by
so
that action.
Is the environment is the environment somewhere where they don't talk? Or have they just stripped the words out? Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, they've stripped it all out, because you really
to me,
yeah,
a battle, like you say, like the stoic warrior who says nothing, I kind of think is easier for a wordless comic.
Yeah,
but that does it take you out a bit when you go into an environment where everyone is talking but they're not? Does that make sense?
I think what this book does, which is a good example of it, we start off with the. It's a harsh environment. Someone's walking along. They have something to protect. We know, you know the shorthand for that. You know, a warrior protecting something. Crossing a harsh land, there are like wolves. And so we see those action scenes of, you build up that sort of relationship. So that by the time that it gets into the bigger stuff, you've got the shorthand between the characters. I think, like you say, Tony, if we jump straight into...
That would have been.
Palaces,
I would have gone. What,
politics,
what is there? No
stuff.
Sound in this environment, or something. You know, a bit like that. Yeah.
So I think there is a. You need to get the reader ready for the rhythm of the story, haven't you? In order to tell the bigger books, which it does well. I mean, I think if anything, it's a joy to look at. But when you were talking for earlier, I thought it was interesting because there were moments you read these books so quickly, don't you?
Yeah.
And because of world building. With a silent book, sometimes is some of the world building overlooked because we're reading it so quickly. There were times I went back a couple of times in this book. Not necessarily that I didn't understand what was going on, but I wasn't sure if I missed a couple of things or if there was a potential. Did that actually, now that I think about it, was the look on that character's face sad? You know, you have to sort of remind yourself of the emotional storytelling that's going on.
Yeah.
It's a weird one, isn't it? I kind of feel that comics have to suck you in.
Yeah.
They have to, you have to be totally engaged. Yeah, well, that would be a good obvious option. Like a June.
That would explain your pull list.
Yeah, the cinema. Hey! But like, you've got to be sucked in by the images and carried along by the story in a comic. And that's the beauty of it. And it's also when you think that comics isn't something you can do whilst doing something else. You can watch a film and look at your phone at the same time almost, can't you? You know? But comics, you need that attention span going on. Now, a wordless comic takes you along. And the prime example of this is Woodring. Like, I'm totally obsessed with seeing every panel and seeing what happens in that. Now, if you add in letters and words and sentences and monologues and conversations, you have to be very careful with what you write because it can take you out of the story. How many times have we seen someone say something in a comic and it's taken us out?
Nice.
So, yeah. And almost the purity of the purest form? Of comics without
yeah
words?
I see what you mean. Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, when they're stripped out, I mean, kind of there's people that kind of say about comics that strip out thought bubbles, because like that's another tool that only comics can really do.
Yeah,
and
you need to return to them, I think, sometimes.
When you're stripping them out, and then you're stripping the speech out as well, like there's a lot of tools you're kind of shedding there. To
does it So if we do agree that maybe if we take them out, doesn't it make never sort of voyeuristic quality to it? Where you're not hearing the thoughts of the person, you're not reading the narration of the writer, you're just watching, aren't you? We're just sitting back and watching this thing happen. I think almost like a silent film almost.
I think most comic journalists would be absolutely fucked because they need to be actually told what on earth a book is about to even get what it's about. Like the amount of times I read reviews about comics, I'm like, that's not what it's even about. Do you even fucking read it?
And or PR links,
And I think to piggyback off that, if it is a sort of a writer collaborating with an artist on a silent comic, the way that people write around that, they feel like they can only write about what they see rather than the story that's being told. Do you know what I mean? Because if a writer's written a silent comic and the script that the artist could get could be very in-depth and there's a story being told, whereas a reviewer will just be talking about the pretty pictures on the page, which isn't...
I don't think I've ever seen a silent comic that's been had a writer and a artist duo, I don't think. They always seem to be... So,
I think more commonly in the sort of indie graphic novel scene, there tends to be a single person. I know the Marvel
more commercial stuff.
And, the G.I. Joe stuff was two people, but
again, you know, the kind of protagonist not talking. Do you find that more endearing as much that you kind of project on them what you think they're feeling, thinking, and saying? Would you find that more endearing and more kind of I can relate to this character more, like because they're not.
How do we find their, and I mean in speech marks, voice? You know, how do we find their, I mean, we've all read Wolverine comics, we've probably got that almost a voice in our heads every time Wolverine appears, but if he's not saying anything and that's the only time we've ever seen him, how does his personality show up? I don't know. It's interesting. I mean,
certainly with villains, for instance, how many times have we read or seen something, or you know, everyone else has a voice but a villain turns up and they don't say much and it's in what they do that you don't quite know what they're thinking. So there's the danger there, isn't there?
I mean, you have to lay it out almost like as if you're, you know, making a kind of a crime drama thing where you're trying to show clues everywhere, you know?
Yeah, like, the classic one, I was just thinking that, and I agree there, 4P, is the classic one is the burglar breaking into the house, breaking in the window, you know, torch, trying to find something, opening drawers. That's never done with words, is it? Or shouldn't be?
In a sort of psychological manner, when a character's saying something, you're making judgments on what they're saying, whereas if you're only able to judge them, you're forced to judge them by their actions. Would you mean you're considering more about what they're thinking as opposed to what they're presenting? Because when you're saying something, that's not necessarily a reflection of how you actually feel.
Or anything.
I mean, sometimes, you can certainly play with the narratives of how the reader's emotionally... It's the point of view, isn't it? It's the viewpoint. For instance, we see a character jump upon this cute-looking animal, right? They jump upon them, they kill them, you know? So when we first see it, we think, that's awful. Later on, we get a twist of it, and we see that... as cute as that person is, they're Hitler. Do you know what I mean? Or something like that. Yeah. And there's a reason for that. And it changes everything, isn't it?
Sort of reframe the event.
Reframing and I think.
I can bring the book that I sort of can suggest.
Bring it in.
It's another one on Global Comics called Recall. And there's elements in the write-up which I said, I didn't get that at all. It says, Recall, a couple find themselves pursued by mysterious lights in the sky along a remote highway. Is their pursuit a dream or something more sinister? Inspired by the Betty and Barney Hill abduction, the first widely publicized alien abduction in the United States. I didn't get alien abduction for this, so if that's that.
Looking at the cover, I kind of get that sort of scene. It's a lovely cover. I really like the cover.
Yeah.
I get that with the cover, but would I get that from when I'm reading the book?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The cover's got the X-Files
thing going on,
Yeah. I think it's sort of 1950s, 60s, and it's like a mixed-race couple, and they're in somewhere backwater in the Americas, and they're getting shit from the locals, so they take off in their car, and this sequence plays out over and over. It's a bit like Groundhog Day in as much that they go back to the start of it and then you see stuff from a different angle and then their chase and flee from the diner in this car. It plays out slightly different every time.
That's a brave storytelling choice to do a Groundhog Day in the comic book.
Rashomon as well is the other version of that where you see it from different people's points of view, which I think is a really interesting aspect.
But like the events play out differently to the main characters. Like there's times where they do see lights in the sky. There's time where they see like a deer in the road that smashes through their windscreen. and there's a lot left for interpretation. That's why I was sort of like kind of framing it as just it's aliens. I didn't really get that. Maybe I'm reading more into it than
I think, because they lead so heavily on the racism in the cafe. You know, that they kiss, and then you see the faces of all the sort of trucker rednecky guy and kind of guys staring at them. It leads you off down that path so heavily, doesn't
yeah.
it? That,
yeah. Do you think is this sort of like an allegory for them being chased down the road and in court and attacked, and something yeah. happens? But it's a fascinating experiment, and
there's something very David Lynchian about the way it sort of looks and feels. That may be the sort of like 1950s Cadillac sort of
yeah. thing. No, you mean the diner as well? Yeah.
It's an interesting one, because I'm still looking at the art style and I'm like, how is this done? Because some of it looks like photos, some of it
yeah.
is hand drawn, some of it's like mixed media. I find the art style is very.
Yeah, I'll give that a read. I just looked at that, man. It looks all right. Yeah.
I mean, what I love about this particular sort of book is, even if we're unsure about it, there's so much to discuss with it. There's so much to say. So much sort of like, oh, does it mean this? Does it mean that? You know, and sometimes in comics that doesn't work, but it looks like it's a weird, trippy sort of style, this story.
Can I pose a question?
Sure.
So each of you has to choose one of your comics that has to do a silent issue. You can't choose your one, Forb, you've got to choose another one. Okay. What do you choose? So you have to choose one of your little back catalogue of books. You think, what would work best as a silent comic, and why, most importantly? So I'll lead off to give you time to think. So mine would be Atomic Hercules, because he's a man of few words anyway, and he fights monsters and robots and stuff who don't necessarily have to have a voice. So it would be the easy option for me to do that.
And that'd be like, well, with me, it would be like the Red Mask from Mars, because it's just, it's one of those, it's like completely, it's a figure of action. Like, a lot of the stuff that you're seeing is what they're, you know, the results are there on the page of what they're doing.
You'd have to have like a bash 'em up issue, wouldn't you? Like
yeah,
a monster versus.
And there would probably be, I mean, I had a thought about this when we were talking about like the Marvel one, you know, when you're talking about the Exiles, or what, you know, how would you, that experiment of, oh, how would you do this? And as we're discussing that, I thought, well, I'd take a narrative where, you know, like something happens and like just a sound grenade goes off and someone's deafened, so it's literally they're just watching things happening.
But I like that. I like when it's given a reason. This is why it is.
Yeah.
I think if you're being an imaginative writer and, you know, creator, when, like, for example, when the Marvel creators were given that option, there's a reason to do it. Don't just do a comic that's silent.
Yeah,
like, do a comic that has a reason to be silent as well.
Yeah. I was gonna posit the idea of silent issues, the TV equivalent of the musical episode. I don't think that.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if that holds true, but because it seems like a lazy thing to do, like a musical episode, whereas a silent issue, there's a bit more skill in it.
Easy for me, but you draw in monkeys. It's more difficult, isn't it?
But one of the examples of that, Dan, is Buffy had a musical episode. They also did that one of the best ones.
They did a silent episode.
Which is completely silent.
So I don't mind the fact that Buffy did a musical episode. It's just everyone else who fucking does one winds me up now.
Yeah.
But what about you, 4P? Who would you do?
I would do George Mayhem.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I would do him in Afghanistan, and an IED would have blown up the truck, so he's gone deaf.
Yeah.
So it's that classic, you That's know, when you see those movies and it's like, yeah. I love it in the film when that happens, and it's all like,
if there was a sound, it would just be a whistle, so you don't want that.
And you do a bit, they tend to do a bit of slow mo as well with that, or you know, smokes in the eyes and this bit of that. It's not always necessarily just the quiet, there's always something else, isn't there?
And I like the idea that he has to get from where it's blowing up back to the kind of base, and his way of fighting his way through and trying to.
But with something like that as well, you can deal with the fact that the visuals are being traumatic. For instance, if like it looks like, you know, when you put a 3D comic and you haven't put the glasses on and everything's kind of doubled, you could really mess with the fact that, you know, the visuals are going crazy as well.
Yeah, it'd be super cool. You can imagine it, can't you? Like, they've got the talking bit going at the beginning, and then all of a sudden it goes silent, and then it's because he's on his own, and then things are going off. But if you can't hear, then you can't hear someone coming up. So then I guess your sense is heightened or something. So then you have to try and show, how does he know that there's someone around the corner? Or how does he deal with Do you see reflections? Yeah. Does he, you know? So there's quite a lot to play with there, really. I think probably.
I go back to the Larry David quote, where I think it was one of the episodes where he was married and living with his wife, and he says to his mate, "Sometimes I pretend to be deaf. I sit in the garden and I pretend to be deaf. Not too bad."
my stepdad has hearing aids, and he actually switches them off, and they have little lights on at the back. They flash. They're quite small. And at Christmas, he was sat there, and everyone was chatting away. And I was like, "Hugh, do you want a drink? And he was just like, "Yeah, like that." And I came over and I was like, "Are you all right? Are you?" And he's like, "What's that?" And I was like,
"Very wise."
How did you do that? He was like, and he was just like, kind of, you know, finger to lips, like, "That's just not."
Do you play charades? Is it like Saltburn at your manor?
Oh God!
There you go.
Oh, dear.
I don't get a reference. I've not seen Saltburn, so
I think it's a bit of a sex movie. I've not seen it. Either, to be fair, but I think they all get naked at one point.
Yeah.
It's coupled up with the fact that me and Falpy wind up for being posh.
Dan, what comic would you do?
I don't know. I did have like a kind of a small prequel, like Vanguard comic, of where the two of the characters, you find out where the enmity between them springs up. I'd be interested to try and do that silent.
Mm. So doing it in flashback makes sense in a way as well, doesn't it? A silent flashback.
Yeah.
So essentially there's two characters, they're kind of military buddies. They're on some mission. One gets fucked over, the other one leaves them behind. And as the other one's kind of missing in action or whatever, he consoles the girlfriend and they kind of come in a relationship. The other one comes back and it's where they were best mates. Now they fucking hate each other.
So, I mean, there's an element that it's in your DNA, Dan. I can sense some G.I. Joe in there somewhere.
Yeah, it's got to be some G.I. Joe in there, isn't it? If you're doing a war story.
But also, they had the classic issue, didn't they?
Yeah. I was going to bring that up, the classic silent issue. And I think the urban myth around that, I'm not sure if it's true or not, is because they ran out of time and they didn't do the lettering.
Oh, right, okay.
I'm not sure if that's true or not. I couldn't attest to it. But that whole issue kind of, I think that started off the silent issue run in like Marvel and the big boys.
Yeah, they were inspired, the Nuff Said project was inspired by the G.I. Joe issue. Yeah, well,
I've got it. I've got it up here. It's G.I. Joe. They recently done issue 21, G.I. Joe issue 21, and they recently did a 30th anniversary one where they, I've got that knocking around somewhere, but they, a different artist tackled a page. Yeah. So each artist did a page of it, and they retold it, and it's essentially one of the characters gets caught, Scarlet, and Snake Eyes, the ninja, has to go into Cobra HQ and does like a one-man rescue, and it's great. It's really good.
One of the beautiful things about it is it's lightning in a bottle, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It can't be...
You do that once, but like you can't do that again because it's a kind of a one-trick pony, and it's great. Yeah. But issue two is that...
Yeah. Here's a question. When does a silent storytelling issue become just an excuse for a creative wank?
I think hallucinations and dreams can be.
There's one that I've mentioned, and I think you know what I'm talking about. As beautiful as the pages are, there's an issue of Sherlin Cowboy.
Right. You don't like that, do you?
It's just a double page. He's just fighting zombies like for the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's nice, but that's a waste of 3 or 4
comics. I mean, if it wasn't anyone other than, if it was other artists, I would have more of the hump.
Don't get me wrong. Art-wise.
Incredible art.
Incredible art, but still, for me, that was one of those, I still can't.
Yeah. There's in a similar way, there's a, in that Nuff Said project, this new X-Men 121, which is the Frank Quietly, Grant Morrison period as well. And they have to go into Professor X's head, as usual, to see what's going on, and they find out he's got a twin sister, but they bottle it. They have a line at the last, on the last page, someone says something,
okay,
and I thought that's cheating.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks beautiful. It's Frank Quietly artwork, so it looks beautiful, but it's like, you know,
do you think it's would it work without the line put in there? If they removed that line, would it work?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, okay. It's like, now we've got to get to work, or it's one of those sort of stupid throwaway lines. Yeah. I can't remember exactly what it is.
Maybe the writer had a wobble at the end.
Yeah,
In that Step by Bloody Step comic that I was talking about just a minute ago, there are a couple of speech bubbles in it, like throughout, but they've just got symbols in them. Right. But it became so much that I just didn't pay attention to them. Does that make sense? So,
yeah.
You know, maybe for some people, maybe they needed to be there. But for me, I was already in it.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Because they're that's not there as well. There's an inconsistency to it as well. For instance, if someone's screaming or shouting to someone, there's nothing there.
Yeah. There's a book I've got called, it's from Nobrow, called The Adventures of a Japanese Businessman, which is massive. It's like, gosh, like A3 maybe in size. Okay,
bloody
it's
hell.
Huge. And it is incredible. It's by Jose Dominguez, his name is. If you guys see it, you'd be like, yeah.
It does look very manga-esque in a way, doesn't it?
It's manga-esque, but the artwork in it is basically right up my street. It's proper, like, cartoony, Spanish-style sort of artwork. It's fucking cool. But going back to Vince's point, is like a creative wank. Like, he's going for all these amazing scenes, like, incredible. Mm. Like, incredible different worlds, and he's just trying to get home. And it just gets more and more fantastical. And there is a story there, but there isn't a story there. In the
enough
same
of
game.
A story, right?
Yeah, it kind of holds together. But really, you're like, A, he's an amazing artist, but B, he's just getting to, every time you turn the page, or a couple of pages, he's just in an even more bananas world. And he's just having so much fun on the page. You can tell.
So you're saying what Vince said is there's a self-indulgence evident massively, on the page over what we normally used to take. Yeah,
it's huge book, loads of colour, loads of art, loads of, I mean, filled to the absolute stacks with characters and creatures and stuff. It's the sort of thing, I remember when I saw it, it's quite old, I think. I can't remember when it came out now. It's got to be like 2015 or...
Yeah, it's quite an old book, that,
The one I'm thinking of, like, off the back of this... And it's weird, I didn't think of it as being like a creative indulgence. But The Arrival, you know Sean Tan's The Arrival? Have you read that one?
Yeah.
That's like
I've seen that one.
There's like a lot of text in that, though, isn't there, as well? Isn't it got text pages?
I think, is it throughout the book? It's not. It's certainly not on the actual pages, is it, I think?
I didn't find it very sequential, that one.
No.
Mm. It's not panel to panel, is it, that one, for me?
No.
Enough. Yeah.
But certainly there is a lot of dreamlike... qualities to it. I mean, I haven't read it in years. It's come out. So
I just looked at that Step by Bloody Step, man. It's fucking cracking.
Yeah, bro.
It's really good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really good, isn't it? So, I mean, Tony, you could have read the whole thing because it's got no words. So
I know. Yeah. I'm just writing it down to remember to read it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
you got, and a lot of the masters have done. I mean, is it Arzak's Wordless? Isn't it by Mobius? There's a lot of really good stuff. I mean, to me, I don't think you get better wordless comics than Woodring. You know, his friend character. It's just, I just find it. I can look down and read that and not look up for an hour.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, but there's incredible. Also a narrative, and each character, you actually understand their kind of sensibility, like who they are, don't you? It's kind of.
You sort of worry about them. You think what's happening to them. They're weird. There's such a strange thing going on.
That pig guy is always like, he's kind of. Grotesque and everything, but then equally he's kind of shameful, isn't he? And he gets embarrassed about things, and it's like, but it's black and white. It's not even like he hasn't got colour in.
Yeah, that's he's what, got a couple that got because colour can be a crutch is the wrong word, but it's a short.
Fuck yeah. Yeah. If mine was black and white, it'd be nails.
Well, you look at a lot of the early Disney cartoons. You know, they're in black and white and silent. Early cartoons were, weren't they?
Yeah.
And it works just as well. And I think that's why Woodring's Frank stuff works. Mm.
Yeah.
I look at it and I think, is he meant to be a fucking cat? I'm not obsessed about details on it.
Yeah. The little toaster guy gets me. Where's he come from?
And apparently this is how Woodring sees things.
Yeah.
You know, he looks out the window and he sees this shit. Fuck me, man.
He has like, doesn't he have like those paralytic dreams or something, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he
something
paralyzed
weird.
In bed and he sees figures go around him and something, but he can't move. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure he has like...
What do they call that? That's a certain thing,
sleep,
isn't it?
Sleep paralysis or something like that. Yeah, I'm
that's
pretty
not
sure
good,
he has...
Is it?
No. But I swear we saw a figure. There's a figure that comes in and he's paralyzed and he can't move and it's there. And it's like quite intense, and he's kind of frozen and he can't. I remember reading something about like around that, because I got so kind of engrossed by it all. Because I remember, was it when you had John McNaught on? Like, God, no, when that, how long ago was that? Like, probably like episode 200 round.
I don't think we've had John on, have we?
Yeah, you've had McNaught on, surely.
I couldn't tell you, man. I'm terrible.
I don't think we've had him.
No.
Where did I hear him? Because I heard him talking, and he was like harping about Woodring and being like,
I've read that he really liked him. Yeah.
And that he's like his inspiration and all this sort of stuff. And when you look at his books, you kind of get like, because he paces things so well, doesn't he? He does like, you know, a seagull flying in the air, look out of the car, see some a motorway sign, go further down, there's like a view of the beach, see like a row of static caravan. Like, he paints little snippets of, I guess it's what I was saying earlier on about you're kind of leaving clues everywhere for people to understand stuff. Same as like in my book that I've done, it's like you have to keep dropping little things in close view to kind of spell out something, to be like, they've been killed, or like, they're asleep.
When I write like no speaking sections of comics, I become a bit control freaky, and Cannon will tell you, because he winds me up about it all the time. But when I write something, I know exactly the beats, and I think that's really important. The flow is really important for it to, like you say, give out those clues, give situation, give view, all this sort of thing. And he messaged me once. He says, "Oh, I'm going to add this and this and this." I said, "No, we don't."
Mind like the storytelling aspect of it, you know. A lot of people who aren't in the medium and stuff, they may look at these things and go, well, it's a wordless comic, so all you've got to do is draw it, you know, but they don't get it. But a script for a silent book, whether you're writing it yourself or you're writing it for someone else, surely that's got to be maybe one of the most descriptive scripts that you'll get, do you think?
It's got to be really thought out, I think.
It's interesting, because I know, so when I don't know how many books I've done. Maybe I've done like 15, 16 comics. I can't, something around that number. And when I did Drusa, I showed this, there's this woman I'm kind of been liaising with to try and sort of portfolio things out and things like that. And we're going through my work, and she's like, this is good, that's good, and so on. And I was like, I did comics, so I'm not really interested in that sort of stuff for what we're trying to position you to work on. I was like, okay, fine. And she's like, but you haven't done any of this sort of stuff. And she's talking about like scenes and acting and storyboards. And I was like, well, I have done a silent book. And she's like, what? And I was like, well, I've done a silent comic. And she's like, really? No words. I was like, no words. And she's like, can you bring that up? And I was like, yeah, sure. So I brought it up and she went through it. And then she said, she's like, could you just quickly, just right now, can you just bung it into a movie or something like that? And then just press play, just so I can see it, like flip through the pages. Like, give me a couple of seconds, and it's like, yeah, sure. Showed it, and she's like, right, okay. We need to see that in video form. She said that is absolutely perfect, because it is showing your ability to communicate things really well without having to use words. So she was like, if we ever want to do storyboarding or this, that, and the other, or advertising or something, it's showing character acting, and also the people that want to use the work will be able to put on their dialogue and see how they would potentially word what you've done. So it became a second tool of, you know, like people see, you know, like pussy man fists and all those sort of things. They think they read the words, and it's hilarious. And I like that. I love like writing those sort of things, but actually, like, when it's silent, kind of like what you guys are saying, people are putting their own dialogue and stuff into it, and therefore they kind of take weird ownership of it. So, well, I thought it was this, and I think this, and it was like, it's been a really big plus. It's hard, it was hard to do, but equally, when I finished it, I was thinking, man, I can do so much more now, like. The way my brain was thinking, and the amount of times I'll get to a page and be like, I need to get to there in this many pages.
Did you find you needed to plot it like almost like tighter? You know, where if you say, you know, now it's midnight in Brooklyn, you can write that, but you know, that it almost has to be a sequence to do a silent comic. Does it, do you feel like that, or
Well, yeah, so I had to do like day and night. She had to wake up and go to sleep a couple of times because right. I was like, this can't happen in a fucking day.
Yeah.
I can't say a week later or a year later, or I'm like, how do, like, if, for example, the next section, they've got to get to wherever they've got to get to. If I decide that's going to take 2 months, how the fuck am I going to show that? Apart from, I have to use weather, right? It needs to be like sun, snow, leaves fall, da 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 da, right? And how many times do I show that equates to how many years? And I guess, again, it goes back to that, putting those clues in. It's putting those little bits in where you're like, that must mean that. Otherwise, so they've been that amount of time, or they're a bit bedraggled, or their hair's got
And maybe they look they look pristine to begin with. A couple of pages in, their clothes are torn.
Yeah.
And you can tell that.
Yeah. Whereas, like, usually, like, when we do comics, you don't have to even think about that because you're like, you know, you do the little kind of intro bit of copy that's, you know, like on the other side of town.
I mean, it's not jokers, is it? Meanwhile, you know, Gotham Bleach HQ or something like that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm sure you guys have seen this. Like, a lot of comics at the moment I've been picking up, the amount of fucking times there's no backgrounds. It's just people talking, or maybe there's a full bodies and it's really nice, but it's just like block color. And it's like they'll have one establishing shot. They use like maybe the top half is red. And then they'll block fill the backgrounds with red to let you know that they're still in that scene. They're not drawing any of the fucking scenes. And you're like, you couldn't do that. Because you'd be like, oh, what the fuck is going on here? Like, you just, you need all of that detail to understand, to see the clues and kind of be led along.
There are certain points of sort of comic creation that you really need to level up when doing a silent one. For instance, you know, we talk a lot about like house styles or whatever. How many times have we read a comic book where everyone kind of looks the same, even if they're different characters? And if it's a silent book, you're in a whole world of hurt if you're doing that.
Yeah.
Because people have to see the differences. You know, there's all these shortcuts that you can't.
People like to know the names of characters and stuff like that. And if it's a silent, how do you do it? How do you communicate that? Because it's normally like, hey, Peter, you know, it's like that, isn't it? Yeah. You know, so you figure out who's who.
Yeah, I cheated in mine because I wrote, so I inscribed Drusa on her sword. So there's a scene near the beginning where she kind of gets a sword and does this, like, this move. And then this panel after it, you see, like, her name up the side of the blade.
That works.
And then when you meet when you meet the next guy, I can't remember where his name is somewhere. I can't remember where I put it, but I basically put it somewhere. So it was like, oh, that's his name. It's not.
I think creators don't need to feel like they have to take away things like that. I mean, for instance, if you're doing a post-apocalyptic zombie comic about Las Vegas, if you got signs that have no words on them, where the fuck are you? Do you know what I mean? You've got to see.
Way.
Yeah, you've got to see like you know, no exit or you know those sort of signs. But it's I mean, I love them. I think you know. I don't know if I could. I mean, could we read them all the time? I don't think if
I wouldn't want to. I think they're a nice little. That's a power cleanser of them, isn't
it?
I'm with you, man.
Well, do you think a useful thing that perhaps they should, the big company should be considering sticking an issue here and there, maybe once every couple of years in, you know?
I don't. For me, and this is just the cynicism and pessimism, a bigger company's doing it feels more like a cash grab, sort of like, oh, look at the novelty. I don't want it to be a novelty. I want it to be a specialty. I want it to be a special thing.
I think a lot of these visual tricks, if you want to call them that, I feel like a novelty, and I felt that. I know there was a lot of love for the Nightwing POV issue, you know, where you see everything through his eyes. I just found it a bit like, okay, right.
You're kind of done with it.
It's
quickly.
Just a trick, very interesting. Yeah. Move on, you know. Yeah.
I think it depends. But... I was gonna say, I think it depends if it's like you say, it's a gimmick for an issue. Like if you're seeing something through someone's point of view the whole time. If it's got an actual narrative purpose and that you need to be in that position to understand the story, great, perfect. If you're doing it just as a bit of a, wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah.
And
you're
kind of just exploring it a bit. It's kind of like,
I mean, the first person perspective is something that I think always seems like a better idea than it is. I mean, people play video games, you know, the Call of Duties, etc., where everything is first person. We are the person holding the gun. And you think in your head, well, if they do a whole film like that, that'd be amazing. And then, like, you see a film like that and you're like, don't really want this. I feel a bit sick.
Yeah. I find it works better. I find it works better in words monologue than I do in. So I like that sort of hard boiled detective, first, you know, narration sort of thing. But I think if you just see everything, like, oh look, there's me loading the gun. You know, it's like boring.
Yeah.
I love it when you used to get the detective narration.
Yeah.
Like you say, do you know, it's funny, it's like that Leslie Nielsen was always classic for that, wasn't it? Gun and stuff. He'd always have those fucking ridiculous
like a blind man at an orgy. I was gonna have to film away for it.
Do you know, he'd have those like monologues and you'd be like, it just was brilliant. Like, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, that's one of the reasons I like Shang-Chi so much, because you know, because every comic is him. It's not now. It's fucking bollocks now. But it's him like talking about, you know, the conflict he's got about fighting, and you know, you hear what he's thinking all the time. Yeah. It's great, and it's one of the reasons I love the Dune books again, because you get that combination all of the characters' time. Thoughts.
Yeah.
So when you say when you say Dune books, are you talking about actual novel books with no pictures in it, just words?
Yes. Yeah, I know it's a bit weird for us to be talking about that. Yeah, look at us brainy fuckers.
I keep looking, because you fucking do this all the time. On this pod, you say things, I'm like, oh, right, is these Dune comics? Where are they? It's not really, that doesn't sound like anything these guys are talking about. And
there are Dune comics now. There are Dune comics. For a while, there was just one comic sort of thing. But yeah, we talk about the novels mostly. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. That's
pleasure.
Couple of nerds.
Do read the books. They're great.
Hello.
Yeah.
I read the book.
It's Sunday evening to that comics on the podcast.
Yeah.
In the movie.
I've watched the movies, as everyone probably has, and I went across over the way, there's a guy over there who's read all the books, and in his house, he's got like all the Lord of the Ring books, all the Dune books and stuff. And I went in and I started talking. You know,
he doesn't live near a school, does he?
Unfortunately, so yeah, I've got to keep an eye on him. So I walked in and I saw the Dune books. And I just literally watched a new movie, which I thought was pretty decent. And I started talking a bit about it, and he just,
look, don't. I think it was at a thought bubble, wasn't it, gents, where we were at the Wetherspoons, we sat down, and I could quite easily enjoy my meal and not say a word because these guys were talking about Dune.
Fucking Dune.
And they were more than happy.
Yeah.
We've talked about it literally for hours at a time.
And we could talk about this subject for literally hours of a time, but I think on the whole, like, it's such an important storytelling device, isn't it, this being able to do this. If you're planning to do it as a creator, and for Pete, like, just as a creator, what advice would you have for someone who wants to try their hand at something like this?
100% do it, because it's amazing way to upskill. It will help you do facial acting. It'll help you pace your pages better. It will help you work out if you want to work in a 9-panel grid, or you know, even going down to how big your panels need to be to invoke relevance of an item or an action. So it really helps you to stop and think. So I think it's really like a major plus on that side. I think, like Tony said, like right near the beginning, you need a reason. So be it that they are potentially deaf, or in my case, have got a helmet on. We don't really know what's going on under there. Woodring doesn't really have a reason. It just is silent, isn't it? But I guess if you've got a reason, a character, it kind of helps you out, because like for me, it's easier to hang a narrative off of it, because you're thinking they can't hear that and they can't do that. So what would it be like for them? Whereas if you're just going in and it is just silent for.
Do you think you have to be careful with that though? Careful with the reason to not become a novelty. Do you know what I mean? If the reason isn't strong enough.
Yeah, maybe it's a real tough one. It's a real tough story to kind of work out. And like I said at the beginning, like, because you guys kind of spoke about it so much, it just made me think it isn't a bad idea.
Yeah.
You know, and I've had loads of people.
If you've got some slapstick in it, I think it works. Like Spy versus Spy or something as well.
Yeah.
I think that works as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Might be a good idea, like, do a 4-page script just to test yourself to see if you can do a silent comic.
Think about fucking Tom and Jerry, you know, Jesus.
Yeah.
Like, that was No, there's no talking in that at all.
It was really. Just the maid, wasn't it? Just talking. Yeah. That was it, yeah.
Thomas!
Yeah.
Chasing around with a broom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, like, you know, old black and white silent movies, like, you know, Chaplin, Harold Lloyd, you know, Buster Keaton stuff.
There
like
was an amazing one, wasn't there, not so long ago that came out that was silent.
The Plank.
Do you remember? Was that what it was?
No.
No, that's, that was recently. That was about 30 years ago.
Tommy Cooper in it.
Yeah. What was that fucking... Wasn't it like the silent movie? Do you not remember that? It's black and white.
Oh, it was a Mel Brooks movie.
Yeah, it came out, wasn't it? Yeah. It was not that long ago, and that was incredible. And it went right through it. It turned out.
Was it the actor?
The actor.
The actor. That's yeah. It, yeah. And then it gets to the end, and it's the whole thing that he can't. He's got a crap voice or something, so like they can't use him in like spoken.
He can't move to the air.
Yeah.
It's he's a star clever. In the quiet ones, silent films. Yeah. But when it goes to. Yeah, he can't do it.
No, so I think but I definitely recommend people have a crack at it for sure. Even if it's in an anthology, I mean that'd be quite fun, wouldn't it? Like a silent anthology.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I was just thinking about that.
Yeah,
because we got like we're trying to do like the horror anthology coming up this year, and I was thinking a silent horror anthology that'd be interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, like a old kind of vampire Nosferatu.
Yeah,
that would be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, there's been many horror films that are based around senses, haven't they? So, you know, the whole, be interesting to see that in a...
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, certainly.
Haven't done one on Taste yet, have they?
No.
Taste.
I remember reading an old Fumetti years ago. I'm desperate to find this comic, if anyone knows where it is, where there's like, they get infected with something in the woods and they start growing like bark and leaves on them. And then they run to a phone box and the girl tries to ring an ambulance and there's a voice on the other end and she opens her mouth and just all this like leaves and bark comes out and stuff. And I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. I remember seeing that when I was a kid. God, it's horrible.
Things were frightening back in the day, weren't they?
Like, yeah. Not now. Bloody snowflakes.
But
pornography is scary.
Obviously.
There's not much talking in them.
It's true. Yeah, I like a little bit of talking, though. I don't like it when they don't talk. I like conversation. I like the romance at the start of them, you know. I've never watched the end of a porno, I'll be honest with you.
A bit of character development, you know. You've got to be really invested, haven't you?
Yeah. I've never seen how they end, though. Do they get married in the end or something? I don't know. Never gone to that far.
I don't know. It's a bit
I have kids, unfortunately.
That's nice.
Wow. What, it becomes like Kramer versus Kramer by the end? I don't
know. Yeah.
Well, I've seen some of those videos.
I just delivered the pizza. Now we got married and got kids.
I say this: some of those videos finish. There's no kids being made out of that union.
And we're back in.
And we're done.
That's
that bit done.
Obviously, keep the conversation going because I know our lovely listeners will have lots of recommendations and good examples of this sort of storytelling. So, if you're on the Slack community, obviously keep the conversation going in the chat. Or on the Twitter, on social media, or wherever. Or if you listen to this now and you suddenly remember one of these great wordless comics, recommend it to someone.
There's bundles.
Yeah. Before we jump on to the next portion, I have a bit of a creative question to ask everyone before we get onto the shouters and everything.
Go on.
This is about like a concept. And it's a conceptual dilemma. To pose to you. You have created a story, a character. You have developed it, you've made notes. You know, you've just done it all off your own back. You've gotten it to a certain point where you're ready to properly, fully develop it. And then someone mentions something, or you see something, and you realise that whatever's out in the world is eerily similar, not the same, but is similar to what you've thought of off your own back without any influence whatsoever. What do you do with that idea? Do you kill it or do you continue with it?
I've had something similar, and I think we're the victims of, you know, a thin line of fucking information into our brains these days, aren't we? When we have the internet, we think, oh, the world's open to us now, we can look at anything. But seemingly we all seem to see the same things, we all seem to talk about the same things.
Yeah.
So I think unconsciously sometimes there's that way that's reason you get a couple of movies about this, or a couple of novels or TV series about comics like this. You know, I think that goes on. And I've had it where I thought, oh, there's something like that. So I just haven't done it, to be fair.
Yeah.
I didn't want to look like I was following the bandwagon.
Because that's the difficult thing, isn't it? Because you could continue it, and the last thing you want to hear is when it comes out, it's like, well, that's just the same as that. Even if it's not. Yeah. You know that you could have made it in a room without any windows, do you know what I mean? Without any books, without any internet. You've just created this.
Yeah.
But that story going through the filter of you, for instance, Vince,
you
might bring something unique to that that might not have been said before.
And the quality that you would do would be higher than some other people, for example. You know, there's that as well.
Just to clear this up, I don't have anything particular right now, but it's happened to me before, and that's always thought about. Yeah. You know, I've just thought.
I can't imagine any creator hasn't come up with an idea that they think, oh, fucking hell.
Everything's out there, though. That's the thing. Yeah. There's no new ideas, is that theory. I don't believe that, but that's what people say, isn't it?
You know? I feel like we get, there's so much kind of things we kind of consume through osmosis, just where we don't even realise it half the time. And like, I remember I think it was 2 years ago, I was working on a book about the origin story of Santa Claus, and it was so good. I was like, this is it. This is my fucking piece de resistance. I'll fucking retire after this one. And I got two-thirds of the way through, and then there must have been three kind of violent Santa Claus films come out.
You had Clowns and I was like, you by
and
Morrison.
I was just like, fucking bin it. Like, even though there's violent bits in it and it wasn't all violent and it wasn't the same story, I was like, it's now become saturated. And I'm just like, I don't want someone to be like, oh, he's watched that.
You copied that, yeah. Mm. I had a fucking idea about a desert planet where they were growing like this. No, it's the same thing when someone fucking comes out with a stupid idea about, oh, Batman, why doesn't he give all these money to the poor? And it's like, they're the first time they've had that fucking idea. And it's
mate.
Question, which came first, the big worm from Dune or Tremors?
The big worm off, from Dune. Dune's the 60s, man.
You're lucky they didn't bite your fucking head off.
I don't want to say
that's fair play.
He invited you on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did Vince make you say that?
Yeah.
No, but it's that sort of stuff, like, you know, you see that. I remember when I watched the new film and it kind of came up, and I was like, I'd seen it in the 80s when I was like, when was Travis?
You
like
kids
90s?
These days. Yeah. Kids these so, days.
Yeah.
Who did the worm? And then I thought, there's loads of this like worm going, you know, it's not new or anything, but people still riff on it, don't
there's
they?
There's loads of stuff from sci-fi that's been nicked from Dune.
Yeah.
Repurposed. I mean, virtually all of Warhammer 40K is.
Yeah.
I mean, as well, ISIS nicked the word jihad from Dune. That's where I think they got it from.
That's not true.
Bit naughty there.
I think it might be in the Quran. I believe it might be in the Quran.
I did read one of the reviews of Dune 2, and it's like, ends up Paul Atreides not that great because he wants to do like this interstellar jihad. And I was like, that's the story.
That's how I know what jihad means in Dune.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
That's the story.
But there is a difference there.
Don't ruin it, Dan.
No.
I've only watched the
first one. Is this a metaphor for the withdrawal from Afghanistan? Yeah. No, it's from the fucking 60s.
They had it first.
There is a difference. I just get off this potentially problematic subject. But there is a difference to like creating something that is very clearly influenced by certain things and wearing that on your sleeve, and that's like an Atomic Robo, for instance, doesn't exist without Hellboy, and they like do you know what I mean, it's that kind of stuff, but it becomes more difficult, doesn't it, if you've created.
I think we can tell we can tell we're cynical old fuckers, aren't we? I think we can tell when something's like a cash grab because something's popular compared to something that is just another idea on the same sort of, you know, came out about the same time.
But but to counterpoint that, what about other people?
Other people, I'm sure, can't it? Joe Public can't see. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Look at the something like Rock and Roll Comics, you know, just like massively just cashing. Oh, Britney Spears has got number one. Let's do a comic in a week, put it out.
Yeah. Again, like as a creator, I think you've got to move past, people will make lazy comparisons about your book and what your content's going to be about, and don't take it too personally, because And someone does a visual shorthand, you say, well, I've got a character about like a superhero that flies. Oh, well, like Superman.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like.
Although okay. I remember years ago we used to laugh at the fucking, oh, this is like Buffy meets the Sweeney, and then it's fucking like neither.
No.
But that's sort of short, lazy comparison thing, I think, sometimes as well, is another thing. Yeah.
I've been kind of drip feeding my son kind of comic stuff.
Excellent.
You know, he's like 4 and a half now. And
good.
Yesterday we were watching, I think it was like, was it Lego Batman? Not the film, but like the kind of TV series, whatever it is. And Superman comes in and he's getting shot by the Joker, I think it was. And he's like, oh, how come Superman's not getting hurt? And I was like, oh, because he's impervious to bullets. And then he like shoots him laser eyes and he's like, oh, you can do that. And then he flies off and he does that. And he's like, Dad, it's like, yeah. But what can't Superman do? I was like, no, nothing. He can do everything. But what's the point in that? I was like,
can't have sex with a lady, can he? Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to go into that with a 4 year old, am I?
Can't see through lead.
Yeah.
Yeah, can't see through lead. Magic.
He's got a good point, though, isn't it? Because really, and you guys know more about this than I do, he's one of the characters where you're like, not really much, not many characters where they're literally impervious to pretty much absolutely
they
everything.
Had to create things, didn't they? Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it
was, yeah.
Like the radio.
That's what Kryptonite.
Kryptonite comes from the radio series or the TV series, I can't remember which now. I mean, yeah, it didn't originally come from the comics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's kind of like, it sounds great when you go, yeah, nothing can beat him. And then you're like, that's quite a hard story. So no one can ever beat him. It's not really.
Yeah,
is it?
Like, well, that's why they depowered him, you know, post crisis, didn't they? You know,
it always creeps up.
Did that with him.
Always.
Yeah.
1 minute he can barely fly 100 miles an hour, next minute he's like pushing the earth off his axis. Yeah.
And every so often they want him to be the bad guy and everyone else has got to beat him, so therefore he has to be invulnerable to everything again. Cause then
I'm ready for that to move on.
Yeah.
I can't remember which film it was, but it's one where he like lifts the fucking like planet up that's got kryptonite all in it, and he's like, is it the
Superman,
boat or something?
Superman Returns.
And it's just like, all right, now he can fucking lift an island full of kryptonite, but a minute ago he couldn't have a rock on his fucking neck.
Yeah.
I bet it's in that movie once. I saw the pictures in there.
You know, I get so angry about this. I want to go and find the person, just fucking punch him.
Sound like a comic fan.
It is Bryan Singer, so you'd be well justified in doing that.
Yeah, but he's a... Is he not like... I liked his X-Men movies. Were they not any good? I quite like them.
I like Usual Suspects, but he's a bit shady, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah.
I like shady people, though.
Allegedly.
No, we need to go on X now.
We'll hop on X, have a quick
attack. He's a fucking wrong one. But do you know what's right about this show? It's the shout-outs.
Oh, yeah. Should I go first?
Slick AF. Yes.
So I'll go first. I've only got one. Clear Run 2 drops on Kickstarter next week. The first issue following the adventures of a rescue greyhound is a massive fan of ours, I'm guessing, and also the boys on the Slack were saying about it. Created by one of my favourite people in the world, Helena Edwardson, at Art92. You can find a landing page now. They've got that whole go and register to fund it when it breaks. Have a look on X or on the Slack, and you'll see the link in there.
Nice.
That's my only one this week.
I had a call with Damien today, and I said to him, why didn't you call it Clear 2 Run? And he said, that's a great idea, Dan, but it's already gone to press. Why didn't you say that?
The print.
Thank you, you prick.
I said, well, you want a tie, you know?
That's the worst, isn't it? That's the worst when someone says that. After it's printed.
It's gone to press.
And you notice that spelling mistake? I printed it, mate. I don't care.
I don't care. I remember that with Vanguard Book 3. I sent it to the printer and I sent a couple of press copies out. And Gary Watson said, was there a reason why you put that page in twice?
Oh,
the face he's pulling is a face I know all too well.
Fuck!
But to cheer you up, have you got any shout-outs, Dan?
You know I have. Lawless, 2024.
VIP tickets are sold out, aren't they?
What?
VIP tickets are sold out.
Oh, wow, okay. Today. Oh, there you go. I'll continue to talk about it. We've got a Pleasant Life comic series. There's a comic about geeks and relationships. It's got 7 days to go. It's Smash for its target, so you can go check
this
them out.
This must be a short comic. Hey!
Clockwork Werewolves, issue 1, gothic steampunk horror. Classic horror meets steampunk style as a paranormal investigator faces the Clockwork Werewolves, and that's from our friends at Hellbound Media. So you're going to get that comic. It looks fucking ace. Oh man, some of the artwork is brilliant. So go check that one out. That's on Kickstarter. We've got Fully Loaded by Jimmy Broxton. There Goes the Future. Blade Runner meets Sin City in a neo-noir cyberpunk crime thriller. Art to Die For, a Steel to Kill For, and a shattering finale you wouldn't see coming in 100 years. That's got 2 weeks left, and it's smashed for its goal once again. And we've got John Sterling, Super Spy, Windbreaker. I've been talking about this show a couple of episodes. A4 32-page, full-color, all-ages comic featuring John Sterling, a secret agent of Snoop.
If you don't mind. Tara Togs, The Silence of Unicorns. It comes from the Comic Scene Crew. A 68-page mystery adventure graphic novel set in Scotland, but it's inspired by Tintin. And if you have a look at the visuals on the Kickstarter, it's got a real sort of clean line style to it.
That looked great.
It's got 45 days to go. Oh, they're doing a long one on that one, but it's already doubled its number. So, yeah, going back, because it's definitely happening now, I would say.
There you go. Oh, brilliant. Nice one.
Nice. Thorpe, do you have any shout-outs? Anything you'd like to say to the people?
I do. Well, should I do my shout-out and then say something to the people?
You can leave that to the end if you want.
Either both, whatever you like.
Underground Kingdom Comics presents Romance. So that's a little group that I'm kind of involved with. Adam Falp has got a story in this, which should be, I mean, Falp doing romance.
He does love romance.
I'm very excited. I sent him a message when I heard that he was in this one and I was just like, mate, I cannot fucking wait to read what you've done. Vincent Bell Robertson, a Scottish illustrator, has done the cover, which is pretty sexy. Then you've got a story by Kai Reynolds, Little Blakely, obviously Falpinator, Anna Reedman, you know, the talent that is.
Oh, yeah.
I own some OA as an investment from Anna Reedman.
Oh, mate. Yeah.
Nice.
Her stuff is killer, isn't it? Yeah,
it's a good point, actually.
Absolute legend. And then Matt Greaves, he's done a piece in it as well. So,
oh, cool.
I think it's,
Matt was in our anthology, wasn't he? Four piece,
that's right. Yeah. He's one of the boys. £3 for the PDF, £5 for the printed version. I know. So when I was in the last one that went out, and we basically did two at the same time, and we all decided that that's a little bit much, and people were getting confused between is it a variant or is it actually two books. So they're just launching one this time, but it's got 11 days to go. It's nearly made its
target. Needs a little push, doesn't it, I think.
Needs a little bit of love for the romance. But I think they're trying to... I think it finishes on... it launched on Valentine's Day, I know that much. So it should be, what was that, like maybe a week to go?
Yeah, it's a busy day for us, mate. Probably that's why we didn't see it the first day.
Yeah, I was too busy, doing the do. what have I got to say to the people? just be nice.
Yeah.
You know, just... share some love around there. Start sharing things, like things, comment on things. You know, I mean, I've had Cliff has shared a lot of my work lately. You guys have done a lot of that on Instagram, and it really.
So, if you're a member of the Slack or part of the people we know, then if I see it, I'll try and share it on Instagram.
Yeah. But I think the algorithm is an absolute fucking nutbuster. Absolute nutbuster right now, and it's fucking so many people over in terms of like small artists because there's this whole pay-to-play thing now, and I think if we can all kind of help each other kind of boost signal noise and stuff, that can only help, because I think in the past we were doing all these shows and stuff together, and that's kind of drying up a little bit now, and I think we could really do with all kind of coming together and doing stuff rather than being little clicks everywhere
I agree.
That'd be my statement to the people, Vince.
Wow.
Can I do one last quick shout out?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck's sake, Dan.
I'll tell you what. I've completely forgotten what you just said, Falk, because... he's completely done you over there.
You're talking about June again, Dan.
No more June references.
What do you want to say, Dan? What would you like to say?
We're doing the March of the Mutants on the Slack, the draw-off.
Yeah.
Where we're doing the THG Ninja Turtle drawings for the month. So if you want to get involved, there's a drawing list. Use that. And go for it.
That has been very good. I've enjoyed those.
Yeah,
Tony's got man, they've got some fucking great stuff.
I've got one Nation Under Atreides. I've got the Inkblot Festival was a brilliant success, from what I hear, from a couple of weeks ago. Dan Charlie went and gave me a little rundown of it. The boys there. And the boys have just announced that they're doing one in Nottingham now. Waiting to announce the date. But Inkblot Festival, which I think was only £3 entry. It was a good little festival. Everyone really enjoyed it, and they're moving it on to one in Nottingham. So watch this space.
Nice. Yeah. Nice.
Perfect.
So many shout outs then. It's time to recommend some books to send you off into your week with stuff to read. Now, as always, the guest goes first. So after that powerful statement and those
which
really, really emotive words that the co-hosts shat all over, would you like
the demagogue?
Would you like to recommend something to our lovely listeners for?
Yes, I would. Weirdly, originally it was going to be like the classic Monica and all that shit, but everyone's said so much about it now that it's almost like, because I think we've all been reading these, like just before Christmas, it felt like all these amazing books were coming out, these huge, big fucking tomes from these masters, and everyone was all over it. So that's what I've really been reading. But I have read Werewolf Jones and Sons Deluxe Summer Fun Annual, which, as I said to you guys, I really wish that he had said fun anal, because I feel like that would be more.
Because it can be fun.
It can be, and I feel like that's more of a Hanselman kind of.
Yeah.
I think he would get away with that. But I mean, it's as always beautifully made. And here's a funny little thing. So before I got it, I was watching his manga chat, which ironically never really talked about manga at all. But it's a fucking mega YouTube program if you're into indie comics, especially from America, because they just like go into it all and they give loads of kind of shout outs here and there. But so when they did this book, they wanted to use the old Fantagraphics logos. So they've got one there because they wanted to keep it really old school and they like that. But
Fantagraphics, oh, nice.
Like, we just had this new logo done. So just to fuck them, they did this to the inside of the book.
A massive logo on the cover.
Basically, if you take the dust jacket off, it's a white book with an entire Fantagraphics logo on the front. That is it.
We're going to do that in tribute going forward.
We should. But what is it? I mean, it's a classic annual in terms of it's got puzzles, games, various kind of little short stories. And it's done by Simon Hanselman, known for Meg Mogganow and obviously Werewolf Jones. And then also it's got some stories in here from Josh Pettinger as well, who's a kind of one of the Brits, isn't he? Who's made it over into
the UK. He's from the Isle of Wight, isn't he, Josh?
Yeah, and he won an award at the Angoulême, didn't he?
Yeah, he was in competition at Angoulême this year. Yeah.
So he won an award there I'm not sure if it was Tedward. No, Goiter. Goiter won the award, wasn't it? But yeah, I mean, it's just filled with absolute fucking filth. But it's beautifully drawn and it's absolutely hilarious. And I asked for it for Christmas and my mum bought it for me along with one other book. Should have been three books, but I got two. Don't want to talk about it right now. It's painful. She's a bitch. But basically, my mum looked through it and I opened my present. I was like, oh, amazing, thanks. You know, this book. And she's like, I can't believe you made me buy that. And then she just kind of walked off.
She thinks she's on a watch list or something.
But yeah, I mean, it's brilliant. I totally recommend going to buy it. It's just full of loads of crazy antics, full of drugs, full of sex, full of weirdness, drawn in, you know, a really fun, beautiful kind of style that we all need. I mean, I don't need to go too much into it because, I mean, most of us know this guys and what they kind of get up to. But I highly recommend Werewolf Jones and Sons, the Deluxe Summer Fun Anal. It's great.
Good. Nice. Always good in the summer.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. What? Yeah. Tony, would you like to go next?
My first one is Reluctant Sadist, number 8, sent to us by Hal Weaver. We got a review copy of this sent through to me. I reached out to him. He'd finished it. And he said, oh, send it to me. And he sent it from Riga in Latvia. How cool is that?
Oh, that's cool. Riga. That is cool.
Yeah. This really is the sort of thing that I dig. I sent you guys a picture of it, didn't I? Black and white, zine size, I'm going to say. Crammed with content. And it's very comfortable in its own sort of wacky skin, which I think is good. I previously seen Hal's work in his story in Respecto in Ugly Mug 7, which I talked about, which is one of the books I got at the Satanist book market. this series actually began in 1985, ran 7 issues through to the end of the 80s. Hal dropped the project to become a sculptor. And then 30-odd years later, he found his way back to it. So that's quite cool. Pages 1 and 2 has Hal himself declaring that he's back and not dead yet. Just kind of, as a similar sort of old bloke, I kind of like that. The covers, one is, it's a bit like, it's meant to be a tree, like knots in a tree. But he's,
I can't say it looks like a tree.
You see it as a face, which I kind of like that thing. And the opening story is quite, I think it's about how it discusses a hat worn by, I think, him. And the outrageous stories he has about the hat. Raquel Welch apparently wore it in on the set of 1 Million Years BC. Its farts can be transformed into rose petals through the hat's power. So it's sort of crazy, wacky, out there kind of stuff. The next story shows that gnarled tree that we saw on the cover, and Hal compares the world of the frozen forest, which I'm guessing is in Riga or in Latvia somewhere, and what he calls tumor trees. So each of the lumps on the bark of the tree being tumors, and asking, and then he asks the machine. He says, "I'm going to ask my machine about it." And his machine is his Google phone, which I think is really interesting. And it's a phone that he compares modern technology with the aberrations of nature. And what are these growths comparable to? Is it something we need to cut out? Is it a disease? Is it nature? How does nature affect us? How is technology affecting nature? Very interesting.
Deep shit.
Some deep shit, but done with a sense of humour. Yeah, I think. A little bit poignant as well. And is, you can tell there's that experience sitting behind his art, which I quite like. There's a genuine freedom in what he does there. It's not all perfect. You know, it's parts of it are sort of doodly. You know, it doesn't conform to any of the, you know, these days we're very, very swish and professional and almost over professional, aren't we, sometimes in these comics we get out that are very refined and, you know, cut down exactly and graphic designed and stuff. I like that there's this there as well. I think there's a place for both, but I like that there's this there as well. You can go and look for his stuff. Work by him. This is probably a good place to start. You can pick up Ugly Mug as well. You can find him at www.weaverworks.com. So works is W-E-R-X. Instagram, he's Weaverworks. And he sent us little notes and he's a listener. So thanks a lot. Nice. I really appreciate it. Yeah. And please more of this, because I think we really need this. As much as I like the sort of the produced stuff, I don't like the overproduced stuff. There's a coldness to it. This is experimental. It's out there. It's a man sitting there drawing and doing what he likes and sticking out into the world. And as I say, he sent it to us for free, and it's very kind of him. And I'm on board now. So there you go.
I think that's a good point, though, Tone. Like, just the fact that, you know, visually how things work with the story is also important, isn't it? You know, like, and I think, like you say, seeing those pages you just shown does have that kind of depth to it and that kind of thinking piece, because it looks hand drawn, it looks made, it looks like kind of quite real. Whereas, like, you know, Dan's work, for example, where it's like detailed and it's really well kind of produced and the colours are incredible, you kind of need that because it's kind of action and there's kind of a lot going on, isn't it? So it's that kind of,
yeah, it's only a medium, man. You know, there's space for all kinds of things, I think.
You know,
and we shouldn't dismiss it because it's kind of, you know, it's probably not gone through as like a super printer or anything.
Yeah.
It's just done. I really liked it. I really like that. To great. Own that as well. Sort of thing that, you know, when I'm long dead, someone will go through my comic collection and go, "Oh, fucking hell, what's this? It's quite interesting." You know, it's like that, isn't it? You know, there you go.
Historians will go through that collection, Tony.
Yeah. I've already had a couple of messages from people who own comic shops. I'm not saying who they are, saying, "What are you thinking about doing with your comic collection later on?" Oh, you mean when I'm dead?
When you're dead. I have?
You're fucking not having it, my friend.
I'm going to do one of those fucking Viking things, get all my shit buried with me.
Yeah. All my copies of Burn X-Men.
Jesus. Are going in the fucking coffin. We'd have to get excavating for Tony, wouldn't we?
I'm going to be buried like the pharaohs of old. Even the comic shop owners will be buried with me.
Yeah.
I need a phone. They'll have to be, because they won't be able to pay their mortgage once I've gone.
Dan, what would you like to recommend?
Well, I did have a couple of Kickstarter books lined up, and I read them, and I can't, in good faith and recommend them. So I went back to a tried and tested. I got up to date on The Hunger in the Dusk.
Oh, good man.
Issues 5 and 6.
Yeah. And just taking a break, isn't it?
Yes. So at the end of 6, it says Hunger in the Dusk will return in summer 2024. So is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So it's taking a few months off, which is perfectly fine because the way the story ends in 6, it's a good part for a break. It feels like it's time for sort of like go to the lobby and get an ice cream and a drink.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's not a massive hard stop, is it? But it's enough to just be like, okay.
Well, the story's got to this point. So it mainly focuses on Tara, which is the orc girl, and she's split off from the main party, and she's kind of, the whole story is on her own, and she like reflects back on her life as when she was younger and how much harder it's got. It's just, once again, like a comics masterclass from Wild Goose. He's just absolutely fucking love his stuff. Mm. It's
almost a bit more personal, this issue, for me.
Totally, yeah. It's almost like a character study of the one orc character.
Yeah, the foot's off the accelerator a little bit, isn't it, on this one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't feel happy that I was waiting for that full-on driving straight into a relationship situation with her and the human.
I quite that they've taken that off-road a little bit because I presume they're going to circle around for that.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, making us wait on there. They're moonlighting us.
Because otherwise just straight away like, oh, let's go for it, baby.
There's certainly some interesting details about like her when she was a kid growing up and her relationship with the other main orc in the story. That was it was a good way to sort of highlight that, which hopefully, you know, how
a bit
is
more
that
politics as one.
Yeah, how is that going to inform what we read going forward? Do you know what I mean? That's going to be interesting. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I honestly, if you've not got on this book, I'd really recommend it.
I'm guessing
it.
There's a trade coming out. Is there anytime soon?
I did look it up on Amazon. There is a trade coming around. I hopefully have all the extra covers because each issue's got about 3 or 4.
Yeah, I bought a couple of variants when I bought issues.
Variants. IDW collections.
They're really nice.
They normally
can be pricey.
Yeah, but they normally do have the collections. When I've been reading, no, it's not IDW that does that. I was just trying to think of someone else. In their collections, do they have all the variants in there?
Sometimes I think, yeah.
Some books do and some books don't.
It needs a hardback, doesn't it? It needs a Bond Destiny size hardback.
I'd love to see the sort of the cover because he's got that kind of the Art Deco look going on the covers.
And I love seeing like Chris's just design work, you know, the character sheets and stuff like that. I love seeing those elements, which sometimes they use as variant covers.
Yeah.
Which I'm not such a fan of using character work as a variant cover. I prefer it to be a thing that is in.
I'd rather someone got paid to do a cover for a variant cover. Yeah, you know.
Yeah,
definitely.
But
what you got, V?
My one is a Carsis number one. This.
I haven't read this yet. Oh, fuck, I forgot I had this. I downloaded it in the middle of the night the other day and I forgot about it.
Yeah, this was a Kickstarter that we shouted about. Got funded. I got the.
It's got Nathan on the art.
Yeah, Deluxe Digital is what I got. So I got the PDF. This is Carsis number one, an investigative horror for mature readers. Paranormal investigator Paul Carsis becomes entangled in a mystery that uncovers horrifying forces at work in a snowy Alaskan town. When he is called to investigate a mauled and ravaged body discovered in a snowy small town, Carsis becomes entangled in a mystery that uncovers horrifying forces at work in the frigid community of Thompson Pass, Alaska. Now, this is the creator and writer is Brian Hawkins. Creator and artist Nathan Kelly, our buddy and amazing artist.
Dude, I love his art.
Letterer Francisco Zamora, colors Dom Matthias, and design by Logical Case. This is out from both Feral Kingdom Studios, which is Nathan's work, and Brian's Productions, which is Black's Trauma Productions, which is BLAX Trauma. It's a great first issue, this. Very much that classic, maybe because I've just started watching the new True Detective series as well, so I'm in that sort of Alaskan vibe, mysterious, you're not quite sure what's going on. Certainly in this first issue there is subtle hints that there may be paranormal stuff going on, but it's not, doesn't so much reveal it in the first issue, but you get a sense of who the players is. It starts off with a classic. We see it and it just says now, and there's a character being videotaped. And someone saying to them, you're going to die, and this is the reason why. And then we cut back, and we're introduced to that character. I don't want to put any spoilers in because you've got to read it for yourself, but then you're introduced to the start of the story and you meet Karsis. I didn't know Karsis was the name of the actual... So part that almost made me like it more because I love it when, like, a detective is like the name. Maybe that's just my love of Columbo, Miss Marple and all that stuff. You know, when the detective is the name of
Ellery
the
Queen. Yeah.
But Karsis is that sort of gruff, grizzled kind of guy. He's a little bit fish out of water because he is in a very remote Alaskan town. A lot of the locals just don't like him because of who he is. And there's a bit of racial tension underlying because, you know, the fish out of water, it plays into that. Not heavy-handed with it. I really like the sort of the balance of it. We kind of get we get the tension and we get what's going on, but it doesn't take away from the mystery or everything else. It just enhances it, which I like that. I mean, it looks glorious, looks beautiful. Nathan's work is. I'm a sucker for these sort of landscapes anyway. You know, the middle of nowhere, Alaskan Rockies, all of that. There is a
white out. All those sort of books, great, aren't they?
And Nathan's work, obviously, like his use of shadow comes into when people are sort of going into these log cabins and the lights are all on, but these dead bodies are there and there's just these candles around them, so it's quite specific. There's something specific about these murders. So his lighting is so on point with this, and lovely sort of shadows, like it's got that Eduardo Risso. It's just silhouettes of people sometimes, which really works well. He does this little design, little feature that I didn't notice until like a couple of when I had a sort of reread and I noticed it, which I really, really appreciate, which I can't think of too many other people have done it. This is in a cold, harsh environment, this kind of place. It's obviously an environment with a community. But Nathan, whenever you see characters outside, you can see their breath. There's like a little bubble of like the breath.
Oh, cool.
And that's all the way through the book. I did not notice it until the second time round. But it adds another, it's just that little detail, another level of sort of like just realism to it.
Yeah.
Especially.
It gives you an idea of temperature and stuff, though, doesn't it?
Completely. It's like, completely.
A lovely little detail.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to see him because I'm booked up now for Heroes, which is where we met last year. Yeah, I'm hoping to. I hope he's got a table there. That'd be cracking.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely like an artist that should be, you know, he's on one of our just watch.
I don't even know how. If I was an artist and given that thing, all right, you're in a cabin, dead bodies on the floor, all illuminated by candles, I'd go, how the fuck am I going to do that?
Yeah.
Like Scooby-Doo, how you approach that.
He does some interesting sort of panel work as well. I'd be interested to see what the script was like for this as well, but clearly this is a big collaborative project. You can tell that these two guys have come together for this. And they know the sort of subject matter. They know the inspirations. I mean, we clearly see what this sort of thing's kind of inspired by, but it's becoming its own thing. Like, I'm just a sucker for sort of page design as well. So when you see a page where it's someone walking from one side of the page from the left to the right, but you just put a little frame around one of them. So they're on the page twice. The background doesn't move, but they're on the page twice. But by putting a little frame around one of them, it has that sort of illusion of movement.
Movement in space,
which is...
How many pages is this, V?
I think it's about 32, 40 pages.
Okay, cool.
I mean, there's some back matter as well. There's a letter from Brian in the back about, like, you know, what he's creating here and future books that are going to be coming out. You know, this is the only downside to this book for me is because it's an indie comic, you know, there's going to be an issue too.
We've got to wait now.
You just got to have the wait. Whereas,
you were talking about it, I was thinking, when's the second one out?
It's like that. Oh, just let's see where this goes, because they've left it on a nice... There's a character that's spoken about. There's a cliffhanger that makes you think, oh, that's going to be interesting. That's a game changer. So, yeah, Karsis number one. It was on Kickstarter. Obviously, if you go to feralkingdomstudios.substack.com, if you sign up to a Substack, you can get a...
Yeah, I'm on that one. List. Yeah.
This was on the Kickstarter. So if you look for Karsis number one, which is K-A-R-C-I-S. Black's Trauma are on social media at blackstrauma_prod. So that's B-L-A-X trauma_prod. And it was one of those... I know we sort of pledged to it and stuff, but as it was sort of being funded, I remember when it was sort of funded, there was like these little sort of videos. I don't know why I like it. I appreciate when creators do this, when they just put a really appreciative video. Thanks so much for all the support. We've just, you know, we've just like been that. Funded. Mm. You know, it's just a little thing that sort of endears you to the creators more. So, yeah, keep an eye out for them because I'm looking forward to seeing what else they got coming. So that's mine.
Nice one.
Nice.
Tony.
Last one. So another bit of horror, Hound. By Madcave Studios. Yeah,
this cover looks fucking great.
Fucking, mate, look inside it. Fuck me. Writers Sam Freeman and Sam Romesberg. Artist Rodrigo Vasquez. Letters Justin Birch. Editor James B. Emmett. Came out 28th of February this year, 1999, if you're buying it physically in dollars. But it's already on Global Comics, so I guess they're dropping at the same time. Global Comics are getting it the day of the release, which is pretty cool.
That's great.
96 pages, full colour, paperback graphic novel. The cover is, as you mentioned, V, it's the open jaws of a wolf. But in that contains British soldiers from World War One, which is I don't know. It's just.
But just to describe, they're sort of. It's almost like they're walking out of a cave, isn't it? It's like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird one, isn't it? I didn't expect to see characters more reminiscent of British weekly comics from Madcave Studios. Mm. I don't know why, but I didn't. Unpleased. So the story is a man. It opens on it's got a start and a finish that are from later. So bookends. There's this man is out walking his dog, and he finds the diary of a soldier in a wolf's den. The wolves are asleep, and he finds this diary, and he takes it home and he puts the book out and he starts reading, and the book is narrated. So the comic therefore is narrated, and when we get the story of this soldier, and it's the greatest, brilliantly poetic, like. I think when you go to a heavy subject like World War One, which if you're in, you know, the UK, is a massive thing for English literature and, you know, Siegfried Sassoon and all these sort of people. And it's got there's a real resonance, depression, darkness to World War One, isn't it? That we don't always see with World War Two adventure stories, you know. Private Barrow, he's the main character, a young English kid from London. He meets his senior officer. He arrives in the trenches, meets his senior officer, who tells him that his experience in the sewers of London would be of use to a special squad who are working in the south of, I guess, France. He's given a gas mask and told that he's now part of this. That's now part of his uniform, and he has to wear it all the time because of the gas. And then he meets his new unit, who are called the Hounds. One of them tells them that they need to get going. So they go, so come on, kid, we need to get going. The sun is setting, and you begin. It's at that moment you think, what's this about? But at this moment, I just think it's a World War One story. I don't really presume it's anything more at that point. And they head out into this. They head out into this terrible, muddy wasteland, and there's this broken down, shelled house. And Barrow wanders in there, and he's wandering around having a look. You know, his first time out. You know. In battle, as or in the battlefield, as it was, and he's quickly called down into his team, down into the basement. And what they've got in the basement is they've got what I think are German soldiers hanging up, tortured. And they say to him, "You've got to kill them." They invite him into the ceremony to kill these men and be born anew, is the phrase they use. And you're thinking, right, this is taking more of a horror turn. Mm. This is very strange. And he doesn't want to, and he legs it off. After thinking something's not right here, this isn't right. And it turns out that these men, it's hard to make out. It's never properly telegraphed, never properly explained. And in a way, I kind of like that. These men are not, I put them as some part cannibal, part wolf. So they're almost like a bunch of just crazy cannibals. As they're eating these people as well. And as he's been chased, he runs into one of them who offers him the heart of a dead body to eat. And he says, that's part of the ceremony. And he manages to get away. He says, I've saved the heart for you. And when he's doing that, a wolf appears by his side, by the innocent soldier's side, to protect him. And you think, what's this? What's going on? Yeah. What's his link with the wolves? Really
what
interesting.
What is going on? Yeah.
Yeah. and it becomes this sort of urgent, violent chase through the empty, muddy fields of the, you know, just dirty, evacuated area of this World War One. And Barrow becomes very changed. There's a moment in a house. This is about halfway, so I'm going to explain this bit. There's a moment in the house. He goes in there and he's hiding. And he's thinking, these men are just, these feral men are after me. And there's also German soldiers about. So he's kind of trying to hide from them both. And he's hiding in this house. And he looks out the window and there's a crew of like disgusting looking German infantrymen with guns. And he's keeping quiet and he thinks, I'll hide in the cupboard. And he opens the cupboard and this woman, a local woman, jumps out with a knife and tries to kill him because he thinks he's an enemy soldier. And in order to keep quiet, to stop the soldiers coming, he has to kill her.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, and it's this massive turning point in the book. So this happens, and then it really gets dark after that. It's really interesting. There's absolute genuine poetry to the writing in this. It's really thought out. There's some lovely single page images of just the landscape of where he is.
Okay.
It's very important you put people in where they're acting. You know, you put people in the position so you can understand from place and point of view. And he's painted as young and naive, but he's got this real guts, man. He's a fighter. He defeats, you know, he's managed to stab a couple of them and get away. And I think genuinely, when we as comic readers, Charlie's War, do you know what I mean? Is where we go to immediately with World War One, don't we? But you've also got stuff like All Quiet on the Western Front. Like I say, you've got war poetry and stuff like that. Birdsong is that famous book, isn't there, from a few years ago? And and it really plays into that feeling of just despair and darkness and overbearing death is everywhere. It may as well be a fucking other planet, this whole environment that he's fighting in. The art is lovely. There's a real looseness to it. There's a real instinctual looseness to it, not to stop you understanding who everyone is, but it's not superhero art, put it that way. But there's a real motion to the running and the chase and everything, a real energy to it. And yeah, absolutely pleasant surprise. I've not read much Mad Cave. I don't know about you guys. Have you written?
No.
They've been coming up for. I think they're celebrating 10 years. I think.
Yeah, I thought. Wow, is it that long? I couldn't believe it.
I think they've just been churning out stuff, and I know they've been mentioned more and more over the past year. I think Mad Cave.
Yeah.
Some really interesting stuff.
It's weird because like usually if someone said to me, "Oh, there's this book. It's about werewolves and a war," I'd have been like, "Another one, eh?" Like, just not, didn't really do much for me, but just how you kind of put it there and like the fact that they're showing war in an unglamorous way and it's not this kind of romantic awesomeness to be a werewolf and ripping people apart in a war, you're kind of like, that's a really interesting look at a kind of common used narrative, isn't it, really?
Yeah, yeah, it's like Fiends of the Eastern Front or something like that. It's not quite, I mean, it's
funny when you think about it, isn't it? It's like war goes without saying. Is just hell, and throughout history, being a werewolf is cursed, and it's, you know, a hellish existence. And yet, throughout a lot of narratives, it's be a werewolf in war. It's cool. Goes against.
Yeah, it's almost like I'm not sure. It's almost because it doesn't stray too far into the supernatural.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if these are just. It's almost like a cult, but why are the wolves protecting him? It's very strange.
Which makes it scarier in itself, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting. Really, really good. Yeah. I mean, we recently had that Sergeant Rock versus Nazi zombies thing, you know, so we get it a lot these days, don't we?
Yeah.
But
There's a time and place if it's delivered right.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time it's the shorthand, isn't it?
Yeah.
Exactly. Probably.
It's probably fucking hard to write as well. Yeah. Like, you know, Tony always harps on about write what you know. And like, you know, I would never do a war book because I've got zero experience in anything like that. I would not know how to write it.
But you are a werewolf.
I feel like I could write a war book in terms of it was just blowing shit up and people attacking each other. That would be difficult. But if I had to write one that was an actually emotive piece,
I could not
do that because I've got no idea.
You can't draw on that.
You know, like when we did George Mayhem, I mean, obviously Tony wrote that.
But a little bit more, didn't we?
Yeah, but I mean, I had no experience in being in any sort of situation like that at all. So it's kind of like, fucking hell, this is a good writer on it.
In a way, it's, you know, the PTSD is something that is in all war stories that are well written to me. You know,
massively. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my second one, guys. There you go.
Nice one. That sounds great.
Yeah. I've added that.
Nice happy ending.
Reading list. Well, I'll tell you something there on a bit of a positive note that I'm quite interested about. If you go to Mad Cave, they have a classic character and a new comic is starting from them. Right.
Oh, I know this. Who is it? Space Ghost, is it?
No.
Oh, no, go on in.
Dick Tracy is coming back.
Yes. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Dick Tracy's coming back, and
calling Dick Tracy.
Yep.
Oh, amazing.
Yep. Michael Morisi, Alex Segura, and Geraldo Borges, I think, from Nightwing. So
Michael Morisi, friend of the show.
Yep. Yeah, so it should be quite interesting. So
was it you guys telling me about Warren Beatty, what he does?
Yeah, he makes a movie, doesn't he, to hold the rights? Yeah.
Fucking madman. Brilliant.
So I think that's one to...
I don't mind that movie so much. I don't mind it.
I don't mind it.
I'll tell you what, I need
it's a bit forgotten, isn't it?
Yeah, I need to go... I need to go back into it.
Madonna's in it, isn't she? And Pacino's in it.
Visual style to it.
Like... I'll tell you what, why don't we have an episode where we talk... We focus on Dick Tracy and also a little bit of movie. Basically, for 2 hours, I want to get together with you guys and just talk about Dick. I just want to talk about Dick for 2 hours.
I'm quite happy you have 2 hours of Dick.
Yeah?
And talking about it.
I'm just on the website. I've just seen that Hound book, Tony.
Mm.
The fucking preview pages are incredible.
Oh, nice. Oh, good stuff.
Yeah.
Fuck me.
Lovely design to that book as well. And some amazing comics all round this week. And some great creative discussion. I love having a creative discussion. I mean, as well as all the toilet humour and everything that you get on a weekly basis. Ooh. When we get into the zone, I just love it. I just love talking about all that.
There's always a snap where we switch from... Yeah. Humour.
Yeah. And then it comes
We're not
back
just
around.
Bollocks, are we?
No. Sometimes we're all the body parts as well. So. But we hope you enjoyed this week's discussion. And
I did.
Oh, that's good.
Thanks, 4P.
Yep. He's a gem.
A star.
Thanks for coming on late night because I forgot to ring you.
Boys, you know that.
I think you said everyone should make a silent comic. And so I haven't done that.
No.
Yeah. Have you guys?
No.
You guys are pricks. You know that? The amount of
emotional. We know that.
I know you think it's ridiculous, but I'm sure loads of people listen to you guys. And you always say, spark these little bits of information, but we do generally take it on board and go, that's just not a bad idea.
Mm. Yeah.
So I've got to have a little book where I note down things you probably don't even realize that you sound like, yeah, so good. Maybe I do need to do that. You'll say things, be like, no one's doing this in comics. I'm like, am I doing that? I'm not. Shit, I need to
The closest I came to it was when I did Black.
I can say Black's.
Yeah.
That was created, so the art of that was created silently, and then the words came afterwards.
Okay.
It was one of those, it was during lockdown, and it was an artistic experiment to just tell a story with no words, and I asked a friend to come on, and we sort of co-wrote and added words afterwards. So
still available.
Still available, and I've still got loads of pages for what comes next. So.
And George Mayhem still available, never on anything.bigcartel.com.
George Mayhem's great. I really recommend you get that if you haven't read that.
Yeah. Have you still got any Hanks left? I keep getting asked about that. I haven't got any left.
I don't know. I'll ask Falpy. He might have some.
Well,
Okay.
Well,
we've got a meeting next week, me and him, to discuss reprints because CKF sold out so quickly. We need to sort of consider what we're going to reprint, what we're going
to
not.
People didn't sign up to this podcast to listen to a business meeting. Put that PowerPoint away. Forget about your
slide
pie
deck.
Charts.
You don't call it PowerPoint anymore. They call it slide decks. Have you had that yet?
No.
They're going about slide decks in the office. Know, what the fuck are you talking about?
I know more about that than you think I do, but it's one of the only things I do know about. But we hope you enjoyed this week's episode and everything we talked about. If you want to keep the conversation going, then there's several different ways you can do that. You can join the Slack community. There's a wonderful group of people on there. There's different channels. Get in touch with us. Easy to join. People are joining all the time. Loads of different channels, whether it be just podcast discussion or rants or pound shops or, just art threads.
Pound shop's on fire this week.
Yeah man.
I've got so much put on that pound shop. I've got 30 books I need to put on there.
I keep putting it off.
Yeah,
oh, man. It's the postage.
Yeah,
Bunsey put some great 80s and 90s books on there this week.
Yeah,
Artists Against Raging Homophobia. That book is a lot of money on eBay, and he's put it up for a very reasonable price.
Mm.
Well worth having a look.
So join the community if you want to find out what that price is.
Join the community.
And if there's anything else you want to talk about, you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on social media. On Instagram, we're at awesomecomicspod. On X, we're at awesomepod. I know. I still call it Twitter.
Why? Twitter. I mean, you keep hearing people on fucking TV go, you can follow us on X and just tweet to us. It's like, you can X us. It's like, you can X me.
Doesn't make any sense. Mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
Musk is such a wanker, isn't he?
I love calling it X.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you do.
Yeah.
Oh, you can X me, darling.
get me right in here.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's Mark's a spot.
X Mark's a spot.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for listening to us with this on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, say something nice about the show because we're fragile man babies.
They haven't had a comment for ages.
Well, there you go.
Because no one listens to shit on Apple. That's the yeah. on Spotify. Oh,
you would be surprised. But you, yeah, that's true. You can listen to us on Spotify, Amazon, yeah. Stitcher,
and you can recommend as well. And you can recommend on Spotify. You should do that.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Can I do the rest of this bit now?
Yeah, yeah,
right. Carry on.
I mean, for instance, you can listen to us on Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
What other networks, Tony?
We're also on the Pod Network. Would you like me to be the cat?
Well.
Oh, dear.
A bit of politics for you there.
Yeah.
I get that reference.
Yeah.
I totally get it.
Yeah. Where can people find us online, etc. Tony?
neveronanything.com. The tops and bottoms, as I like to call it, is out every Wednesday morning.
Fantastic, love that.
Thank you, mate.
And where can people find you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanco
Comics. I believe it's called
it.
Nice. You can find me on social media at Jesse Diablo, the wonderful Thorpe. Where can they find you and your work and your comics?
You can find me on Instagram at Mr. Thorpe, Forpe. If you want to read Drusa, just DM me and I'll send you a free copy.
Over. Do that. Digitally.
Do it. Do it.
And buy a copy of George Mayhem.
There you go. If you can buy a copy. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I think we're in the, I think we're on eBay, aren't we? Isn't there? What was it we found on eBay the other day?
Yeah. It was up for quite a bit. Yeah.
Dan, your hair looks very blonde. Have you put lemon?
You say this every week, and it's me going grey.
Oh, okay. looks blonde.
Nah, he's definitely got a bros look to him, hasn't he?
It's grey. Look, it's going grey.
That's lemon.
Yeah. Just out of screen.
There's been no fucking sun.
There's a synthesizer just underneath him somewhere.
Flock of seagulls over there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, come on. But we hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Wherever you are in the world, we hope you're happy, healthy, doing well, reading loads of comics, because we love you very much. Don't we, Thorpe? Don't we love them?
We fucking love them.
And just, I mean, you know, because obviously you have discussions with Tony, like business discussions, comic creation discussions, etc. In those meetings, does he say he loves them?
No.
No.
Oh.
I know.
Well, you keep saying, I'm a mind goblin. Don't you keep saying I'm a mind goblin?
Mind goblin, yeah.
These nuts.
Mind goblin.
No.
He's not going to let you get there.
It's not. Jesus Christ. Time to pull the ripcord.
You will get there.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks, Zach, for that joke.
From
bye.
Everyone, yeah. From Dan, Tony, Forby, and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. Keep making loads of comics. And as always, what should they do, gents?
Stay awesome.
I tell you what, that's getting better now that we've got the cameras on.
Yeah, yeah, we can sync up a bit more.
I was a bit self-conscious.
Nah.
It's not like you.
Big camera
I mean, you should put some trousers on. Bye, everyone.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Love you.